On this episode of Podigious.
Izzy's mom in this season has actually stuck with me a lot over the years.
One could say that she's got it going on.
Yeah, Angemon is like the cheater Digimon. Such cheat. Why are you only an ultimate? That is, no.
You know, you have boys and you have girls, so obviously the boys and the girls are going to be like, ew, let's romance each other.
If Santa had Imperial Jamon, he'd have enough time to get everywhere and also blow up castles.
It's kind of like that space right between the butt and the crotch.
Are you trying to find logic in a kid show?
I'm trying to find your face in a kid show.
Your password! You can use mine to get on the internet!
Podigious!
Welcome to Podigious, episode 208, The War on a Very Digi Christmas.
Adventure 02, episodes 38 to 42.
The heterosexual travel agenda, item triggered digivolutions, dubs to subs, and the Adventure 02 timeline.
Recorded February 4th, 2015.
I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by Ashley McDonald.
That's me.
Asher Soffman.
Hola.
And Andrew Soffman.
Hi.
You guys ruined it.
Way to be anticlimactic.
You ruined it.
I love it.
I should send you guys like a clip from a podcast that does this style, so you get an idea for the kind of stuff that works.
I did it amazingly.
Yes. Ashley, you're perfect.
It's true.
That's me.
I wonder how many people are going to get the reference, though.
I get the reference.
A lot of people will get it, won't they?
We watched a couple of things on YouTube the other day.
Well, to be honest, the people who grew up on Digimon will also have grown up on Ashley.
Not necessarily, but a lot of them, yeah.
Only if they had cable.
I mean, oh my god, that's the Amanda show. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It was Ask Ashley?
No, yes. It was Amanda.
No.
No, 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 her character was Ashley.
No, it was Ask Ashley.
It was Ask Ashley.
It was?
Yeah.
Oh, her name is Amanda Bynes. That's right.
That's why it fits so perfectly.
Yeah.
Right. Wait, have you guys seen pictures of Ashley as a child? She looked exactly like Ashley, like Amanda Bynes did.
Really?
It's really creepy.
It's true, it's actually pretty creepy.
This episode of Podigious is brought to you by Chennai Airlines' newly launched Dragon Mode program, the premier Digimon rewarding loyalty program. Consistently voted the world's best frequent flyer program by Digimon Traveler magazine, Dragon Mode offers innovative ways to earn and use award miles, from flights to potential outbreaks of World War III, to one last shot to get fan service of Season 1 Digimon, and the latest in romantic entertainment. The next time you fly, coach, think about how you could be flying Dragon Mode. F you, Ashley.
F you too? What is this?
It's follow-up!
Ha!
Okay, so first off, we have some announcements. Ashley was on an episode of Digipodify, episode 11, which, yes. So Digipodify is another Digimon podcast our friends Danielle and Adam do, and they talk about Digimon three episodes at a time, and they're currently in the middle of the Myotismon arc. The episodes you talked about were...
Yes, the episodes I did were the ones, like, it began with the 8th Digivice one. They're looking for Kari.
What?
Who is Kari? What?
So it's a cool show. You should check it out if you like Digimon. And I assume you do if you're listening to this. last announcement is that we're considering, but are not sure yet, but we're considering launching a Patreon. But we want to hear back from listeners and see if it's something you guys would all want us to do. Like if it's something you would want to participate in or not. And so some things we could do through a Patreon, for people who are familiar with Patreon, it's a way to, I guess, you're the one who's friends with one of the people who works there, right?
I need to explain it to my mom yesterday.
He's recruited funny. Like Amanda Palmer. Come on, you should be able to sell me on this. they were freaking out yesterday because Amanda Palmer launched a Patreon.
Oh.
Anyway.
It's a way to just, like, crowdfund a project.
Patreon's a way to, like... We have spent a lot of time and money, particularly me, I spent a lot of money on this podcast. And one way to recuperate those costs are to bring in ads. And that's not great. I mean, it's not great for listeners. It's not great for us. And I mean, it's something that maybe we might do in the future, but Patreon is an alternative to that where the people who are passionate about the show can donate money to fund.
To make it better.
Yeah. So, not just fund the show, but to enhance it. And so it works with like, you know, as a patron, you basically submit, you donate to get rewards. And then as the campaign overall reaches certain milestones, then we can implement new features. So some things I was thinking of was like having, if you were a patron, then you could submit questions that we would answer in the air, or there'd be a hangout with some of us, some of the hosts and patrons, or patrons would get monthly stickers, maybe t-shirts, suggest topics to talk about. And in terms of milestones, we could get high quality commissioned artwork for the show. We could get equipment upgrades. We could make more episodes of different kinds of things. Those are kind of things that are possible if we get support from listeners on Patreon. But we all wanted to see if that's something the audience is interested in and if that's something people would want to pay for or not. Cause I mean, paying for podcasts is a big deal.
You could also suggest things that you would want. Possibly? Like, what would you be willing?
Yeah, and so if there are any other things that you think would be cool that we could do through Patreon, then we'd love to hear it. I mean, basically, we're not sure if that's something we want to do or not, but we want to see what the demand is and if you guys would be cool with it or not. Now on to news about Digimon, because, I mean, this is a Digimon podcast. There was an announcement for Digimon Fusion Season 2, which is a dub of Cross Wars, and which stopped at the end of the first arc. And is now picking up to do the second arc, and it should be airing on March 8th, which is in a couple of days. And there is a new mobile game called Digimon Soul Hunter, and I'm not sure if it's been announced what country it's going to be released in. It's developed by Korean studio, so it might not be released in the West or even outside of Korea. And finally, the Blu-ray of Adventure came out in Japan, and people have gotten their hands on it, and with the will, Mark FBR did a really good write-up and, you know, like, scanned and screen-capped lots of cool things, and it looks really nice. And, yeah, Ashley was upset that we didn't get it, and I told her it was hundreds of dollars, and then she was like, okay.
I have better things to spend my hundreds of dollars on.
And we have a new iTunes review from Alex the Great. So thank you, Alex, for that. And we're introducing a new segment this week where each episode we look at one 5-star iTunes review, and starting from the beginning. So this first one is from April 9th, 2014. So it's almost a year ago. And it was the first
That's
one we
adorable.
Got.
Adorable.
We were barely a new podcast then. So it was from Bush's Jab, and they said, "This is rad. Oh, cool. I get to be the first review. So far, this thing is pretty neat, examining a children's show from a young adult perspective, which is a format that works well for a series such as this one that's always resonated with me so well. Keep it up." I guess we've kept it up. But anyway, so what we're going to do in this segment is not just read a review. We're also going to put it through a website that translates the text back and forth to 43 different languages. So it starts off in English, translates to one language, translates it back, does that for 43 different languages until it's basically like Whisper Down the Lane, but a little crazy. So I read you their initial review. And this is the translated version. "This project. Hi, Linda. I don't do it in front of my eyes. Don't pay attention, but it's not good for children. Young people at the bottom of the soul will resonate with this approach for women. The only way to go..."
I like that our approach is for women.
No, it'll resonate with the approach for women.
Okay.
Cottages, resonating with this approach for women. The only way to go.
Young people at the bottom of the soul.
I mean, cottages, the only way to go.
I wonder what you can't do in front of my eyes.
Well, Linda, I mean.
Linda.
Linda's the best part. Like, Linda, what?
Hey, Linda. Shout out.
I'm going to confuse people. They're going to, if people like stop listening for like 30 seconds and they're like, who's Linda? What are they talking about? We don't even know who Linda is. Ashley, consistent microphone position. She can't stay consistent position from the mic because she's following around laughing. Okay. So now on to feedback. Wanted to thank everyone who gave us feedback this week. So that was John Summers, Kari is my favorite, Shawnee Mac 23, Cedar Mill, Ocelot Shmoplahin on our comment section, and Alex and Shell and Ian Satoshiman 400 on Reddit, and also some new names in our comment section. Maybe they look like new listeners, so if you're a new listener, cool, glad to see you. That's Fake with an EU for the K, and Smile Wolfie on our comment section, and K Kambara on With the Will.
They could just be new commenters,
right,
rather than new listeners.
Either way, cool to see new faces, and by faces I mean names. So
We actually see your faces, too. We stalk you. I'm kidding. We don't have time for that.
Stop telling people that you're going to stalk them. That's weird. And we got... So, and special thanks to my favorite listeners, Jackals31, PXDmon, and Carl Gondro on Twitter for spreading the Even More Noodles hashtag. We've taken the world by storm.
And Ashley. Only,
not Ashley, you don't get thanks. It was only those four users tweeting it until today, but I mean, today it has gone viral. It is now trending on Twitter in all regions, and it is the cool, it's the cool hip thing to say to... It's what kids say to greet each other.
Even more noodles.
So the first piece of feedback I wanted to discuss is... So we discussed how XVmon's attack is called V-Laser, even though it shoots an X. And I posted that on Reddit, and someone commented, James Epep, commented saying, clearly that's a regular V on top of an upside down V. And I was like, whoa, mind blown. but what I think is even funnier than that is that then someone replied, being like, shouldn't it be called double V laser then? And it's like, okay. And then James Epep engaged and was like, no, a double V is a W, which is different than upside V on top of regular V. And then they got into an argument with like, whether W should be double U or double V. And.
Oh and my like, goodness. This is amazing.
This is the silliest argument ever. But I love that justification for the unanswered question. And the next piece of feedback I want to discuss was from ShawneeMag23 in a comment section, and it was in response to our talking about TK going too far with his I don't even know how to describe it, like his self-righteousness or like his need to punish evil and like how no one else really notices or like it's like his anger management gets out of control. And he has anger management, and no one else seems to notice or care. And we were like, well, shouldn't Padamon? Padamon's always there. Shouldn't Padamon say something? And so ShawneeMag23 had a really insightful reply to that, that, like, Padamon actually, like, is on the same page with him. Like, especially as Magna Angemon is like, you are made of pure darkness, and I cannot allow you to stay in the digital world and stuff. And also, it's reflective of Gabumon kind of going along with Matt's evilness in season one.
But I think the Gabumon thing is different, because Gabumon clearly was like, Gabumon, you are wrong, yeah. Matt, but I'm loyal to you, so I'm gonna do it anyway.
Gabumon pointed out, Gabumon was like, I don't think it's the best idea, but sure, if that's what you think.
Yeah.
Whereas Padamon is like, it's weird because, I mean, as Magna, as his evolved form, he totally says stuff, as Angemon and as Magna Angemon, but then as Padamon, I was just like, I'm a little.
Yeah, it bunny seems thing. Out of place. Padamon.
What is Padamon? A bunny pig?
Pig thing, yeah.
A pata? Yeah, I mean, it can be justified. If it does feel like weird. It's weird writing to have not ever mentioned that from his non-evolved forms. So the next piece of feedback I want to talk about was from John Summers. So this is what they said. Also, I wish people didn't hate on Jakuomon because it's based off prehistoric clay dolls figure dating. Because it's based off of prehistoric clay figures dating as far back as 14,000 BCE, and it's such an important part of the material culture of prehistoric Japan that makes them awesome. I can't think of anything that would have been a better Drogris, which is a Japanese name for DNA digivolution. And this comment, and I think there were a couple others along the same line, it got me thinking, like, it made me feel bad about the way that we all were like, Shakuamon, and kind of like piling on the hate for Shakuamon, because I do agree that it's like cool in concept, but like at least my response to that was like a very gut, like, I just don't like it, like, I don't think it's cool kind of reaction. And I think it's worth noting and calling out that like that is like totally based on just like the fact that it is foreign to me, you know, like this not being a thing that like is ingrained in my culture at all. I'm just like, that looks weird, like it's other, bleh. And that's weird. And
I think it is valid to think that things from the past now contemporarily look ugly while still respecting its cultural significance
I think that's totally true. But I think the reason that at least I find it to look so different and foreign is not because it's old, but because it's from a different culture.
I don't know. I don't think...
If there were a Digimon based on the Liberty Bell, okay, that's like...
That would be ugly.
First of all, it's like 100 times less... ancient,
yeah, so old,
but it's still like we'd like, I feel like we'd have less of a gut instinct to dislike it because we would, like, on a more base level understand that it is important. And the fact that it is both old and foreign, I feel like, contributes to at least my being like, ugh. And
I agree, but I think anything that is that old then kind of just is not part of your culture. And, like,
well, I mean, dinosaurs.
Yeah, but dinosaurs
are cool. Like, but I think
that, aren't culture. There's like
No, they are. Like, that thing, I think dinosaurs, we don't think of dinosaurs as being this weird ancient thing because, like, we're all grown up with dinosaurs on our pajamas and stuff. And it's like, dinosaurs are, like, they're part of our culture. An appreciation of dinosaurs. Also, I think if they weren't, we would just be like, it's an animal, like a giant animal that's at the school. But I think, like, there's a nostalgia and emotional attachment to dinosaurs that is cultural. And I think we acknowledged in the last episode how it is a cool mix of, like,
we acknowledge religious, that it makes sense.
Right, like, the religious, both the religious aspects of Cody and TK's character, but also, like, it's angelic and earthy.
Intellectually respect it. I emotionally do not.
Okay, so the last comment I wanted to talk about was from Cedar Mill, and they were talking about the, like, mid discussion revelation that Ash and I had about, like, how, well, I guess we all had it, about TK. What were we talking about? We were talking about TK kind of living up to Matt and how, like, in TK's fight with Ken, like, TK is emulating Matt and Ken's emulating Sam, and how, like, there's kind of this underlying theme of 02 of characters trying to live up to their older siblings or, like, emulate them. That, so Cedar Mill's talking about that, and Time Hat's, like, not really addressed, so they say, the point you bring up about siblings is actually interesting. With the exception of Cody, every member of the core cast of 02 has or had at least one older sibling. And three of those, TK, Akari, and Ken, have a strong reason to idolize and wish to emulate their siblings, which is only decently addressed with Ken, with it only being brushed upon with Akari and merely hinted at with TK. And then they talk about how Davis and Yoli are kind of the opposite, where they have, like, they dislike their older sibling. But then they noted, so, and then the characters kind of split into natural sets. Davis and Yoli, who harbor negative feelings for their siblings, TK and Kari, who feel the pressure to live up to and emulate their siblings who went before them, and Cody and Ken, who both have deceased family members whose memory they feel the need to live up to. And I saw that and was like, wow, deep. They really are. I wouldn't say deep, but it's like, that's like, I'm like, how did I not see that pattern earlier? It's so there.
So there. Accurate.
And yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, it's weird because, like, it's cool to see that's there now. But yeah, like, I totally think the writing is a fault for not ever addressing, not ever getting around to it to really highlight those things or connect, you know, like, just bring in anything to, like, connect those pairings. Yeah, basically. I guess I also like the how poetic and probably unintentional it is that, like, Cody and Ken are the two that, like, don't get along for so long and are the two that are both living up to their deceased relatives.
Why is this poetic?
Because, like, why is that not poetic? Because they're working through the same things and, like, they're never on the same page for so long. And the way they live up to their deceased relatives is so different. I mean, you know, Ken becomes Sam unquestioningly, like, loses his identity completely, whereas Cody is the whole time just questioning, what does that do? Which is very different. Neither is fully healthy, but definitely Ken's is less healthy, considering loses himself and becomes Hitler.
Arguably, Sam, like, Cody's dad is idealized as a police officer, somebody who, like, sacrificed himself to protect somebody else or whatever, whereas Sam is shown less ideally and therefore,
you know, yeah,
he has less of a standard to live up to, that Kenny boy.
Mm. Okay, boy. So now on to our audience-submitted unanswered questions. So the way we decide on the format, where Ashley and I will each pick our favorite separately, and then we'll argue about which one should win.
Unless we have the same one, then that's too bad.
Then we'll still argue. So do you have your pick open?
I do.
Okay, so my pick is, we're on different websites, so I can tell that we have different picks. My pick is from Tumblr, and it's from, if you don't know how to pronounce the username, It.
This is my unanswered question.
We did pick the same one. Okay. It's from Forget It BMU on Tumblr. And so their question was, how do the protagonists never get those marks on their faces from perpetually wearing goggles? And
I just thought it was funny.
It is really funny.
I also thought there was one scene where, like, Davis gets it, but maybe I made it up.
Well, they very rarely actually like wear the goggles.
If they're just on their head, they should get it on their forehead.
Or they should like mess up their hair in some way.
Oh, yeah, it's usually in their hair in unrealistic anime style.
Yeah, it wasn't really to do with these episodes, but it was funny because I hadn't thought of that. And the listener submitted a particular dialogue draft pick.
Yeah, we have different ones.
Okay. So mine is from Alex and Shiloh on Reddit, and it's from episode 37, when Davis says,
"Those Chinese buns were great!
You had one more than me!"
"Well, I didn't know you were counting!"
"Let me tell you something, when it comes to food, I always count!"
Mine is apparently also from episode 37, who submitted this. It was submitted by Kari, is my favorite. And it's at the end of the episode, because it's when Black Wargreymon is walking away. And Davis says,
"Where are you going?"
"Someplace where things go to disappear."
"You should try my sock drawer."
So
mine's better.
How do we resolve this? I have
mine's
the cat.
Mine's just better. Oh, you do have the cat. That's true.
Meow on demand. So how do we resolve this? Mine's
Rock,
better.
Paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors.
There's no resolution. You both win. Yay.
I didn't realize I could edit this while recording. That's handy. mine's better.
No.
Mine's longer, actually.
What?
That's a bad sign. Mm-hmm. I guess yours is kind of long, too. I just like the dynamic between Davis and Yuli. And
yes, but Davis hits on a universal truism about sock drawers.
I don't think truism means what you think it does.
No. It probably means the opposite of true.
Oh. Okay. Self-evident or obvious. Like, if it's so self-evident or obvious, then Davis doesn't need to hit on it. Like,
no, but Davis is so stupid.
A banality or cliche as well. So I agree. It is cliche. Yeah, it's stupid. Let's pass. I feel like we shouldn't make this much about, like, tearing down the other person's pick, because that's mean to the person who submitted it. But mine's better.
No. Move on with your life.
Need like an objective way to.
There is no such thing as objectivity, except rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Let's do a word count. No, actually, you're counting the words. No, not actually. I'm like, is the only way to help this win is for me to just let you win?
Yes.
It's not personal, actually.
I'm not gonna let you win.
It's. You know what we're doing?
What?
We're picking tributes for the Hunger Games.
Okay. And Davis would definitely win the Hunger Games.
I mean, like the listeners who submitted them. We picked two candidates and they're competing to the death.
I'm sorry. We can save them both. See, we have that power.
No, only one can win.
No. They're going to use their suicide berries.
No. What is that? What's the clue for podcasting? We're going to stop listening if you don't pick both of our answers.
You can leave comments. About
No, we need to pick a winner.
But it's sad that Black Wargreymon wants to go, like, the difference between someplace where things go to disappear being very solemn, and then Davis replying.
I feel like this segment is going to end every time with me just conceding to you so we can move on.
I concede to
you. I concede to you. Black Wargreymon and Davis sock drawer wins. If you want to leave your own unanswered question, a ridiculous dialogue draft about this episode, which is about the World Tour arc, then you should leave a comment for this episode at pettage.com/208, or you can reply to the thread on Reddit, or you can reply on With the Will, or you can tweet at Pettages, or you can reply to any of the threads on Facebook, or on Tumblr, if you make a post and include the hashtag, is it called hashtag on Tumblr? Include the tag, Pettages unanswered question, all one tag, or Pettages RDD, also one tag, so that we know to search for something. And yeah, you should do that. So we can pick your, I have a theory.
You have a theory.
That Kari is my favorite. She was that username so that they could get us saying Kari is my favorite over and over. And then just be like, these people think Kari is their favorite.
That's clever.
So now on to the results of the Rico Style Draft poll from last episode, episode 207. And the number one pick was mine. I win. And it was...
Back to this terrible rain.
It was the Davis being like, I have one eye on the digital world, one eye, and he had like 10 eyes.
He had 3 eyes.
Oh, well, yeah. And the number two one was Ashes, which was the
dirty one.
I'm not sure if Ash picked that because it was dirty or just... I think he did. And it was the, like, it was Ankylomon saying not so much fun when you're on the bottom. And then tied for third and fourth place is Ashley's she'd be my uncle thing, the logic in the back of Greymon.
Yeah.
I kind of spelled your name here. Yeah. Ashley. And the tie with that is Asher's quote from Azulamong about Izzy without his intelligence would be tie. Which I don't understand. There's always one where, like, when I read these, I'm like, I just didn't understand that one. Like, you guys are just crazy. And so by my host, I won. Asher was second and Ashley was third. But I only won by 1 point, and then Ashley was far in last place.
Yeah, so. To be fair, we conceded in the episode that the choices for the RDD were subpar.
You did?
Yes.
I don't remember this.
So I am okay with losing subpar amount of...
I don't remember that, because I remember, like, we had so many good ones from the last episode, from the Zulongwan episode. That one was, like,
there was definitely a point in the episode in where we were, like, the picks don't make a lot of sense out of... like, there's a lot of jokes, but they don't make sense out of context.
Right, like, that corsage one was brilliant, but no one understood it. I'm just a tortured soul.
Yeah.
No one understands my genius, my artistic genius. How many points did that corsage one get? Like, one?
At least everything got at least one.
Yeah, there were no zero. Wait, was there a time when I actually got 0 points total? Or no, it was that I had votes of zero.
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, 0 votes total is like an achievement.
No, I'm pretty sure you always get by with at least one.
Would I get a normal Peace Prize or a Pulitzer Prize for getting 0 points on all three? Which one? What kind of word would I get?
Neither.
Oh, I got 3 points for the corsage one. Okay. Whichever three of you left those points, you're my favorites.
No.
And so just a warning about this episode. So... we are moving to... I was going to mention this in the announcements, but I forgot. We are trying to finish up 02 before Tri starts, which will probably be around April. And so we are moving to a accelerated release schedule. Which
sure
means
we are.
Hopefully we are moving to an accelerated release schedule, which will mean that for the next 2 weeks... we'll actually come with 2 episodes per week, which is a big shift in the once every 2 weeks or so release schedule. So... what that means for now is that if you want to get in feedback for the next episode, has to be in soon. So hopefully this episode will be coming out on Friday, and hopefully you're listening to it around then. You need to get in feedback by Monday for it to be in the next episode. And if you don't get in by then, we'll still be covering feedback as it rolls in. But if you want to be included in the next episode, it has to be in by Monday. Listen fast, I guess. Use 2X Speed.
Don't listen to Jeffrey.
In general or 2X Speed? Just skip the Jeff lines?
Yeah, just skip all of the Jeff
Ooh,
lines.
Ooh, someone should make a podcast app where it just skip selective hosts. Like, I don't like this person, just skip everything they say.
Yes, why don't you do that?
Yeah, I'll get on that. Then probably that's like some clever way to end. We pick up after summoning Sayuryu.
In episode 38 of Very Digi Christmas, Digimon decide crash Jesus' birthday party by celebrating Christmas in the real world. They stop Math's sacrilegious concert, which DigiDestin 2.0 didn't attend because they don't appreciate old-school 90s music.
In episode 39, Draymon Power, Benjamin Button explains that there are hundreds of DigiDestined around the world looking for romantic partners via digidate.com. Arukenimon and Mummymon try to stop the Japanese DigiDestined from finding international love, but a flying metal dragon rockets them through space to countries and cities they can't pronounce.
In episode 40, Digimon World Tour, Part 1, the kids split up into random pairings for the International Stereotype Tour. In New York, the kids save the Rockefeller Christmas tree from Adela's cherry tree and perform the sending ritual in the park named after the coffee shop from Friends. In China, Kari, Izzy, and some amorous martial arts brothers teach an octopus to write "We Come in Peace" to avert World War III. Kari ignores the boys' invitations to view their profiles.
In episode 41, Digimon World Tour Part 2, Australian swimsuit Santa Genai helps Cody and Joe destroy the Great Barrier Reef and round up all the Australian Digimon by threatening to eat them. Meanwhile, in France, TK, his grandfather, and Tai all get a high compatibility score with the same Parisian girl on digidate.com, and it's totally not awkward when all three enter as contestants on The Bachelorette to win her heart.
In episode 42, Digimon World Tour Part 3, language barriers are finally acknowledged. Mexican military men are completely captivated by Hottie McHop Road's Genai, and don't notice Ken and Matt sneaking into the Mayan ruins. Ken discovers that he ought to narrow his preferred age range on DigiDate.com. Sora and Yoli almost freeze to death in Siberia, warmed only by thoughts of big Russian meals. The foreign words tumbling out of everyone's mouth just make them all hotter.
So Ashley, what's your favorite anything?
Ooh, my favorite moment is definitely when Cherrymon attacks the Christmas tree. I was like, I'm genuinely cracking up at this because it's hilarious. And I could totally see Cherrymon doing that. Nobody agrees.
No, I agree completely.
At the time, I was like, this is so, no, this is so silly. But
the whole thing is silly.
Right, the whole thing is silly, and I can appreciate it for being like, just went all out on the silliness. Like, we have this tree, Digimon. What can we do with this? What if they attack a tree? Oh, God, let's do it. Like,
but it attacks the tree because it has lights on it, which is amazing. It's amazing. I love it.
It's the kind of thing that feels like a dubism, but like...
It was clearly there because it's the animation.
Yeah. It just feels like you're like, wait, that could not be a thing. Like, the level of silliness is totally almost beyond most of the dubism stuff. But
it was perfect. Yeah.
Do you have any other favorite things?
Oh, am I doing like all my favorites?
Oh, are we going around?
I think that makes more sense than like going around in circles.
Okay, well, Ashley, take it away.
Okay, well, my favorite episode was 39, Draymond Power, only because it wasn't completely bananas. My favorite character, TK's grandfather.
So wait, was that favorite episode just because it was the least bad?
Yes.
Yeah, probably. That makes sense.
That doesn't really, I don't know, that seems like a cop-out.
Well, then I have no favorite episode.
Least bad episode.
My favorite character was TK's grandfather, which is, how did this happen? How? What is TK? I'm all confused now. I don't understand.
You don't mean from the writing process. You mean from the genealogy in World Explanation for how is...
From all of it. Just how, anything.
Andrew and I actually had to, like, discuss this in person, because he could not get over TK's... heritage.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense at all.
It very well could make sense.
I think Ashley tried discussing it in person, and I was like, I don't care.
Yeah, Jeff shut me out.
Look, so TK's grandparents supposedly both live in France, right?
Yes.
But that grandma that TK's grandfather is referring to could very well be his second wife. There, does that solve all your heritage problems?
No.
Well, when did TK become part French? Like, why wasn't this brought up before?
Well, why is he blonde?
I don't know!
We all know that anyone with a drop of foreign blood in them becomes blonde in Japan.
But if they're foreign in... But then what does that make Yoli? Her hair is purple.
Yeah, it's just his colors.
Well, she's not blonde.
Yeah, but her hair is purple.
So, she can still be Japanese. As long as she's not blonde.
Whatever. I learned all my genealogy from Maid-sama, and you know how that goes, Ash.
That one's confusing. That is a confusing case.
Andrew, go.
Did you have any favorite anything?
Russia.
Seriously?
Russia.
Favorite country or favorite location? Just like favorite country in general?
No, I just love that segment when they all go to Russia.
Really?
Yeah.
You're cute.
Wait, who's not the one with just Yoli and Sora? When do they all go to Russia?
They all meet in Russia.
They pick them up there.
No, I mean, no, the Russian part.
He means the whole part of Russia. The whole time the camera is in Russia.
Yes.
When they're actually in Russia, because they actually get picked up in Siberia.
Siberia is a part of Russia.
Siberia's in Russia, Andrew.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
Russia's really big. It's a region inside of Russia, Andrew.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's late.
Okay.
I also enjoyed that part.
I'm sorry, Russian listeners.
I enjoyed that part because I was like, yes, they're finally like, we don't understand each other. And it's totally realistic. Realistic that they wouldn't understand each other.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know why they would suddenly understand when they start shouting out food words.
Well, yes.
But yes.
Let's just go with it.
It was a giant game of charades.
It doesn't make any sense when they're like, this food thing will mean something in English, and now you totally understand. That makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, right, at the point where you're attaching a word to a new meaning, which is an action, you could attach a foreign word to a random, like, at the point where they're saying word equals this action, they could say a foreign word equals this action too, and it would make no difference. So,
but whatever.
It makes no sense, but I do still appreciate the idea of them not being able to communicate until they get to the point.
And I enjoyed how many times they said each other's names.
That was cute. I liked that. That was funny. I like, yes.
Yeah, that was honestly one of the better parts.
World tour. I love you.
Oh yeah, Asher, what do you love about the world? Tell us your favorites.
I guess because it's world tour, I will pick a favorite segment, a favorite location, I guess. And mine was actually Mexico.
Ugh.
Look, I don't appreciate the way they portrayed the Mexicans, but...
Tell me your redeeming parts of the Mexico.
I don't think you even caught the bulk of the way they portray the Mexicans.
Look, I'm a sucker for the little kid looking up to older figure thing.
Was that looking up to?
Well, I'm also a sucker for that in a one-sided way. That's cute, okay?
Everything about that I hated Mexico the most.
That's okay.
Okay.
I hated, what did I hate the most? Oh, no, I hated France the most. France. Oh. France. France was awful.
France is a close second.
France,
for hate.
God. Just, no. Everything about France. Didn't like. But I also liked that Ken knows Spanish for some reason. Like, why would he know Spanish? They don't...
Because he's a genius.
So?
He was a genius.
Yeah, he's not anymore.
So?
Well, actually, I think he still is. He just doesn't apply himself as well anymore. But yeah, that was my favorite. And then my favorite Jedi is Australian Jedi.
We should have had that as a category.
Oh, yeah, damn it.
My favorite Jedi is definitely Australian Jedi.
Australian Jedi is pretty great.
I don't actually remember enough about the distinctions between them. Like, I mean, yeah, Australian Jedi is the one that stands out to me because he had a Santa.
Australian Jedi's name was Hogan.
Yeah.
There was one of the Jedi's was really annoying, and I don't remember which one it was.
Was it Jackie? In China?
Probably.
Yeah, it's probably Jackie.
No, I think it was the Mexican one.
Was it the Mexican one? He was kind of annoying.
Yeah.
He was so annoying that I was like, you've endeared me to you.
What was his name? I forgot his name.
There were so many names introduced. Yeah.
Jose?
Oh, that's right. Okay. I have a big pet peeve about Jose, and it's that he said hola instead of hola, and I'm just like, no.
Hola.
Just get out. Just get out of this country.
Isn't that how you introduce yourself?
Yes, because I was making fun of it, Jeff.
Oh,
I only got that now. That's good. I like it. Quality.
Makes you want to eat challah.
Challah.
You're so Jewish.
Where are my notes? Okay, so my favorite moment was... Okay, actually, two favorite moments, and they're kind of similar. So the first one, which is a little bit higher, is Ken's mom's reaction to the kids laughing during Ken's Christmas party.
Aww.
Or attempted Christmas party. But her reaction of being like, there are kids in the house. This is so nice. It's been so long. It was really sweet.
It was.
I don't even remember that.
And I think I had a similar reaction to last episode when Ken asked for permission to stay with Davis or whatever. And I was like, aww. Yeah.
These moments don't make me go aww, but okay.
Well, I don't know. I had several experiences in my childhood of going from having no friends to having some friends. And so that experience resonates with me a lot. And I mean, it's also weird because like, it's bittersweet looking back on it because like, I would kind of regret going back to having friends and not spending time with my family. So like, I'd kind of sympathize with the parent being like, oh, I'm kind of sad they don't spend time with me anymore, but they're so happy, like feelings. Anyway, the other moment is when they are leaving for the world tour and Izzy's mom intercepts them to give them food.
Bless that woman.
I don't know. We don't see much of the parents. We don't see much of the parents in this season at all, but...
So anytime you see a parent, you're like, favorite moment.
Well, I don't know. You expect her to be like, no, you're not going to go. I'm not going to let you go again. I almost lost you one time. And said, she's like, here's food. I prepared for you. Like, it's sweet and practical.
Yeah, like, that's a moment that's actually... Izzy's mom in this season has actually stuck with me a lot over the years. And while...
One could say that she's got it going on.
No.
Season one callback, no. Yo.
I'm leaving this podcast. Goodbye. It was nice knowing you all.
Well, everyone abandoned Jeff now.
I'll feed her in.
As she was in the middle of a sentence.
You left.
You didn't actually leave. He's still on the call. So, and my favorite episode was episode 42 for finally acknowledging language, which I'll talk about more later. But yeah, that's it for now. Blech. World Tour arc. I have, like, really strong memories of loving this arc.
Yeah, I still have a deep nostalgia love for this arc, but it is not great in any way, shape, or form.
In trying to think about why I was so excited about it as a kid, like, was there a ton of marketing for it?
Yes, something? There was.
Or advertisements?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really, I don't know, I was actually on a cruise on the Mississippi River when the episode 40 aired. Wait, no, which episode? It was the first one where they actually, when we went to New York, which I guess was episode 40? Yeah. And so, like, I remember being, like, so excited to watch it, and I was like, no, I'm going to be on a trip, I can't watch it. And then I went to the gym, which had a TV, on Saturday morning to watch it. I remember watching it on this gym overlooking the water and, like, having to stand on a treadmill awkwardly and not actually use it. Yeah, it was worth it. Not worth it now, because these episodes aren't that good.
I just don't remember. I remember more the advertisements for this arc than, like, actual arc.
It's also, this arc, I think, reran a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. But I do remember it being a big deal, because it was, like, the Christmas episode and then this.
I think I remember the Christmas episode more. That's not even on Christmas, though, so.
Well, it was on Christmas Eve. I had a false perception going into this that it was a week before, but no, it's on Christmas Eve.
So you lied to me.
The World Tour arc happens on Christmas. Yes, I lied to you. So it's also, like, the pairings in this arc are so random. It's like they felt like they were there to be different.
Like Kari and Izzy and...
I don't think they were that random.
Well, for the sake of people who haven't watched it recently, so it was Ty and TK, Izzy and Kari, Cody and Joe, Yoli and Sora is the one that makes a lot of sense, Ken and Matt, and Davis and Michael.
Cody and Joe didn't feel...
Cody and Joe, too. You're right. That's also...
Davis and Michael didn't feel out of place either. It's only Izzy, Kari, TK, Ty.
Ken and Matt.
No, the Ty and TK one's not that random.
They both... I get them both confused because they both... Ty's initials are TK, and...
You're
TK's
right, they are.
Nickname is
That's
TK.
Weird. I never noticed that.
We've been through this, Ash. you have noticed it. We've talked about it.
No, but it's That's not weird. Really random that Ty and TK are together, because they've done it in the past.
Well, that's not random. I feel like that's not random so much as their characterization is.
Oh, that's true. They were split apart on their own before. I forgot about that.
I was like, TK, you cheating on Kari, you filthy, filthy boy.
With her brother. Ooh, yeah. Scandalous.
Very yes, scandalous.
No, like, we already know that Ty has been protective of TK in the past, and TK looks up to him. Like, that's a big reason for Matt's angst.
I only felt that Kari Izzy was strange.
That was kind of weird.
Consciously.
Yeah, that's the only one I found weird.
It's just, like, the season has very blatant pairings for the DNA Digivolutions, and then they were like, well, we can't do that because that'll be too repetitive, I guess, so let's split apart the power so they can't get to Ultimate.
Well, it's because they had to include the Season 1 kids.
And they also needed one Season 2 kid per location to open the portal.
You're right. I forgot about that. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Actually, in the dub, it sounded like Jedi opened the gate once. One of the Jedi clones.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. I did read about that as a dubbing difference.
He might have.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're supposed to... only the D3s are supposed to be able to open the gates that they all need. So, yeah, it makes sense they spread across the Season 2 characters.
I guess if I have to find a way to justify Kari and Izzy, Izzy is sort of TK's right-hand dude... TK. Ty. Izzy is Ty's right-hand...
See? See, it happens!
I blame you. Right-hand dude... so, like, why wouldn't he trust him with his sister? But that's kind of not a great explanation.
So he inherits her. She's a hand-me-down sibling.
I mean, their interactions didn't seem strange. It was...
It's just a weird pairing up, yeah. There is actually a lot of TK... Oh my god, a lot of Izzy and Kari, fan work out there.
Really?
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Really? I think I've seen some of that.
Izzy's actually a pretty popular guy in the fandom.
Ew. I say that purely because he, from season one.
Anyway, you can never forgive him. These pairings, they're very different from the episodes we got in the first season, where and a couple of times in the season where people would be paired off and they'd have to deal with it, and it was kind of like, the point was that they had to get along, and this time it's just like, no, they're just there, they don't really conflict or anything, it's just like, they're there, kind of like a professional relationship, like, yeah, we've been sent here together, we're partners in this thing we're doing to save people, whatever. Partially, I guess that's because of time. They don't have time to really explore.
With Izzy and Kari in particular, or all of them?
All of them. I think that's why it's like, it didn't feel out of place for Izzy and Kari to be together, because they just, you know, were there for the task. They did it. They were professional about it.
But I feel like their personalities, like, Kari never conflicts with anybody.
True. Well, she and your league get into a lot of slap fights.
That was once.
Anyway, the structure of this whole thing is weird, too, because, like, the first episode in, which is split across New York and Hong Kong of the World Tour, not the first episode's arc, the first episode of World Tour, has one new Digimon, which is, like, and the next episode has, like, a ton of them, like, five or six, and then the third one has none. And I'm just like, how did they choose to divide this? Like, they were like, well, in France, they just need to dump all the new Digimon.
I mean, they were all basically the same Digimon, to be fair.
I guess they were like, well, we have this family of Digimon we want to explore, so let's put them all here, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, I feel like this arc would have been more interesting had they not this arc, actually. The next arc would be more interesting if they hadn't kept foreshadowing the next arc in this arc at the end of every episode.
That was annoying, because then the narrator at the end would always be like, what is Mummymon going to do with this child?
Right.
And then the next episode would start, and I'd be like, wait, Mummymon's not even in this episode.
Well, you don't remember the structure of it, because, yeah, I mean, it's just, like, I start thinking about the logistics and, like, what are the villains planning and stuff, and this arc actually makes a lot of sense as a distraction, and I feel like it'd be a lot cooler if it was, like, the audience was distracted along with the kids. Instead, it's like, we're all like, guys, what are you doing? You're missing the point. Go back. These kids are getting abducted.
I'm not exactly like that. I'm like, I thought it was a good diversion, like, in the course of the next episode, I would kind of forget that the narrator had been like, what's Mummymon going to do? But then because they keep calling attention to it in the narration at the end, I was like, then eventually my mind goes back to it, and I'm like, wait a second. Like, when it gets to Arukenimon, it's like, what's Arukenimon up to? I'm like, wait, we didn't get to know what Mummymon is up to.
So you just kept forgetting, and that's why it was better for you.
What is Dagomon up to?
It's just if they hadn't said it in the ending narration, it would have successfully been, like, fine for me.
It's also weird because it's very similar to... There are a lot of similarities to the Myotismon arc, which I'll get into a bit later. But, like, in a lot of ways, Myotismon arc was a diversion for the Dark Masters to take over the digital world. And this is similarly a diversion for Arukenimon and Mummymon to kidnap kids. But compared to that, like, this... I'm going to talk more about the timeline later, but the time period where they're kidnapping kids is, like, a couple hours. You know, like, it's not like they've been gone for days and take their time. It's like the events of this arc take place over a couple hours. So that's interesting. Okay, so first thing I want to talk about in the general segment is language barriers.
What language barriers?
Who needs them?
So in the dub, there are no language barriers until the third episode with... Actually, so the first episode is New York and Hong Kong. The first one is New York and Hong Kong / India border. The second episode is Australia and France. Third episode is Mexico and Russia.
Yes. Yeah.
/ Siberia.
/ Siberia, if you consider Siberia a separate country, which is not. So in the dub, we don't get any language barriers until they get to Russia. And
that's last.
So my impression watching this was, okay, this world actually makes more sense if you pretend language barriers don't exist. Pretend that everyone speaks English. Because, I mean, it's also kind of true that English is more universal than Japanese. So it would kind of make sense if people spoke English everywhere, at least a little bit.
Yes.
But then they start, okay, so I guess it is actually internally consistent in the dub, because then, like, it could just be that these three people in Russia don't speak English. You know, like...
I almost felt like then it was insulting the Russians.
For being the only people that don't.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'm pretty sure the only reason they kept that in is because they couldn't come up with some other reason for why they didn't talk at all to each other and had to talk about food and had to point at each other over and over.
Yeah.
But, okay, so in the Japanese, it's a crazy world of language not making any sense.
Really?
Yes.
That sounds so desirable.
That actually, I got that sense in the China episode. It sort of seemed like they didn't know what they were saying.
So I'm going to run through it. So Michael speaks Japanese like he did in earlier. So that makes some sense, even though he's American. Michael's dad speaks English.
That makes sense.
Doesn't speak any Japanese, which is why they don't really talk to him that much. But you don't really notice any English.
Yeah, he seemed pretty out of it.
They're just like, he's a movie star!
Yeah, and then he's just like eating onigiri on the side.
Yeah.
The Canadian Army at Niagara Falls speaks Japanese, because why not? Mimi's parents speak Japanese, which...
makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, they still speak Japanese, and the broadcast in their car is Japanese, even though it clearly looks like an American dude. And, like, maybe they found some Japanese broadcast, American television or something, American news. It makes some, maybe. Explain it.
In New York? That's probably possible.
The American Digimon and Digidestin all speak English. Sorry. Japanese. I'm getting these all confused. So,
of course they do.
Up to this point, everyone speaks Japanese, except for, like, when it's funny to speak English. The New York City police speak Japanese. And then, okay.
No.
So here's where it gets crazy. The Hoi brothers, the three brothers in Hong Kong.
Yeah, yeah.
When Kari and Izzy appear, they speak English.
English?
I assume it's, yes, English. I assume as a way to bridge the gap, like... we speak Chinese, but we assume these Japanese people also speak English. Like, let's find common ground.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Here's where things don't make sense. Until they land, and after they land, they speak Japanese to themselves.
What?
Okay, that would be this is a pretty common thing, actually, where, like, you just assume everyone's speaking their native language, but if you need to understand what they're saying, you have to do it in the viewer's language. So.
Right, you just, like, transition.
Right, is that what it's doing, or?
Yeah. I think that's what it's doing.
I think that must be what it's doing. Like, I first encountered this with Lost, where whenever they had flashbacks to some non-America country or non-English-speaking country, they would start the flashbacks with subtitles and speaking the native language, and then would at some point during the flashbacks just transition to them all speaking English. And I think the intent with that is supposed to be you don't notice when it switches, and you're just, like, used to, you get set, like, you get the framing that they're speaking a different language, and then you kind of just, like, well, it's easier people understand without reading subtitles.
I mean, it's like in Code Geass when Britannia people are speaking.
Well, that was just, I guess that's, without any other information, you're supposed to assume they're speaking their native language, but because of other reasons, they make it in whatever language it's being broadcast in. But I don't like that.
I feel like it's normally because they can't pay for bunches of voice actors that speak a different language.
Yeah, it's true. I swear I recorded the Hoi brothers speaking English because I didn't record the Hoi brothers trying to speak English because I thought that was borderline offensive because they're actually in character supposed to be people who don't speak English natively, so their broken English actually makes sense. But here is Michael's dad.
Hey guys, fantastic! Wow, delicious!
Amazing!
Wow, delicious! Continuing on, the Indian girl speaks Japanese. The Chinese army speaks Japanese.
Well, maybe at that point they were doing what Lost does and just doing it in they were all actually speaking English or something.
Well, yeah, I assume the Chinese army is speaking Chinese, and you're just supposed to assume they're speaking their native language.
I mean, do the characters react like they don't understand? That's the part that would, like, does Kari and Izzy react in a way that's like, I have no idea what you just said to me?
Well, there's no one that speaks to them. Whenever they speak to Izzy and Kari, they speak in English. When they speak to themselves, they speak in Japanese. So they make up an artificial language barrier. They make a language barrier when they have conversations that bridge a language barrier, kind of. But it's also weird because the character that was written out on the wall, or the cliff, is supposed to be because they, like, Angelwoman and Carbutariumon are like, we could, or Angelwoman's like, I could go talk to them, but she can't because she can only speak Japanese. And so they write the thing on the wall because that's supposed, it's not supposed to be we come in peace, it's supposed to be like, hello in Chinese. And they're like, the guy from Hong Kong can write in Chinese and they can read Chinese.
Then why do they let them by?
Because they're like, hi back. I don't know. It doesn't make any more sense in Japanese. It's still silly. Oh, I think the line they give in Japanese is instead like, well, all are part of, well, this might be from the dub, I can't remember which, but it's like, we're all part of the same army against the monsters of the world or something.
Yeah. That was in the dub.
then I can't remember what they say in Japanese.
I don't know.
Equally nonsensical. So in Australia, I can't remember, is Derek the name of the Digidestin in Australia?
Derek is Australia guy.
Yeah.
With no pants.
Isn't that pants?
What?
Dude was wearing a very small Speedo.
What?
And a t-shirt. Derek?
I don't remember this.
He's the Australian Digidestin, the one who was on a I don't know what that kind of surf, sail surfing thing is, but...
Windsurfing?
That thing. Yeah, his name is Derek, and he was not wearing much.
His last name is No Pants.
Yes.
in Japanese, he speaks English, which makes sense.
Right.
But his introduction is really funny, so I'm going to play that. This is what, this is when he introduces himself. And in the Japanese version, his name is Dingo, not Derek. So,
right, I think I knew that.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, so listen to his introduction.
This is the Digi Destiny Dingo of Australia.
Amazing.
He's cute. And whoa.
It's, but the weird thing is, he says Digi Destiny. Like, I'm the Digi Destiny of Australia. Like, yeah. They're clearly trying to say Digi
Destiny. Destiny.
Wait, they don't even use Digi Destined in the Japanese.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, do they?
Well, it was clearly trying to... No, they don't. They never say that word in Japanese, but it's clearly a nod to the American dub terminology, which would have been out at the point where they're dubbing...
Because he speaks English, they made him say that. It's funny.
Yeah. But they didn't say it correctly.
Doesn't matter. It's so cute.
And, I mean, later on he switches to speaking Japanese, which is the, you know, just using whatever language the show is broadcast in, even though you're supposed to assume they're saying something else. Although it doesn't actually make sense, because he is in on the joke about teasing the Digimon about the food and eating them, so I don't know about that. TK's grandfather in France, I mean, he says a couple of French things, but that's kind of the same in the dub. He, like, says a couple random French words, otherwise speaks Japanese.
Well, his last name is Takaishi, so whatever.
Well, actually, no, but when I was in Japan, my professor actually made it a point to say that the Japanese are very, very fond of the French.
Hmm.
So you'll actually see a lot of French bakeries for some apparent reason.
I think I've seen that in anime.
Because they like their bakeries.
So it is fairly possible that he's actually Japanese trying to be French for no apparent reason.
Just like, I like France, so I moved here. And
well, that would be funny. That would answer a lot of questions.
Yeah. Okay, so moving now to Mexico. So everyone in Mexico only speaks Spanish, and Ken is the only one who can translate, which is why the girl only talks to Ken.
Right.
I didn't watch the whole segment to see if she also has the romantic attachment that's in the dub, but I suspect not as much. And that the dub, you know, since they didn't have the language barrier, had to make it about a romance thing. But yeah, it's why Ken is the only one who speaks to the guards, because he's the only one who speaks Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess they mentioned. Did they mention that in the dub?
I don't remember. I don't think I was paying much attention at that point.
We were talking before about how Ken speaks Spanish, so...
I mean, yeah, he's the only one who can translate some of the things Rosa says, except most of the time she speaks
English. Yeah, because she, like, says random words, and Mormon's like, she insulted me. And Ken's like, no.
Right, I forgot about that part. Yeah. So in the Japanese, it's just, like, everything she says is incomprehensible to everyone. Yep. And then in Russia, nothing's really changed. Like, the Russian people speak Russian. Japanese people speak Japanese. And, so that's the weird thing, that, like, the language barriers are all kind of don't really make sense up until... Well, they make sense in the... You have to, like, kind of suspend disbelief and assume that it's a TV show where they have these laws, where you switch to being the broadcast language just to make things easier. Up until the last episode, which is episode 42, which is the Mexico and Russian one, which is... In that one, in both versions... Well, not both versions. In the original Japanese version, that episode is full language barrier intact, which is weird. And I looked into the writers of the episodes and figured, like, well, each of them has different writers, so they have different styles, and one of them... It makes sense that one of them wouldn't prefer that style of using the broadcast language. And looked... The writer is Reiko Yoshida, who also did scenario for Zero Two. So I figured maybe she has enough, like, clout to be like, no, we're going to get people who can speak Spanish or whatever, or we're going to force people who speak Japanese to try to speak Spanish. And she's apparently the writer of the first four movies, which I didn't realize. Yeah, the other two writers for these episodes. Oh, right. So the other two writers for these episodes don't even have Wikipedia pages, but looking into their Anime News Network pages, one of the other two writers of these episodes, who is Yoshio Urasawa, also did scenario for Zero Two and did the series composition for the Fushigi Yuji anime. They had some clout and not terrible. But I mean, Reiko Yoshida has done lots of cool stuff. Like scripts for Free.
Free!
And K-On. She wrote all K-On, apparently. And she did screenplays of Maid-sama. And apparently did series composition for Romeo X Juliet. And more recently, this anime season has written a lot of episodes for Shirobako, which is a pretty good show. Yeah. So I also kind of speculate, like, maybe this was her idea, because she's listed as doing scenario writing for Zero Two, so, like, this could be her scenario, but we'll never know.
We'll never know.
Away from that, I wrote the section down in my notes as the ghost of Myotismon's army, which I think is funny because it has two meanings. but I don't want to spoil them for Ashley.
Just going to stare at my microphone apprehensively.
Okay, I don't care about spoiling for Ashley anymore.
No.
This arc is very much like in the... No, but we can't... She's not going to remember this phrase. Okay, she must remember enough to...
You don't stand anyway, a ghost of a chance?
So this arc is very much in the shadows of Myotismon, the Myotismon arc in Japan from last season. It's the ghost of Myotismon's army. It's also the army of Myotismon's ghost, but that's for later. So I don't know. We got like a lot of reactions to when the Digimon start showing up, and people are like saying it's really dire and stuff, but it just never feels as dire as Myotismon arc.
Mm-hmm. It's not as dark.
I mean,
people keep saying it is, though. People keep saying it's like a worldwide catastrophe and stuff.
But I feel like for us as an audience, doesn't it not feel bad? Because like the Digimon that come to the digital world are not an organized army. They're just random Digimon, right?
Yeah, they're just like trying to get home.
Yeah. So like there's no stakes. But for people within the world, that would make sense that they would be afraid because they're like, there are random monsters here.
That's true. Yeah. Like, yeah, but it would make sense for them to be freaking out. They don't care that they're not organized. They're not like, these people don't have a leader. They're still destroying our homes, but whatever. They don't have a leader, so let's calm down, guys. No, that wouldn't make any sense. Yeah. I kind of had, like, lots of different, like, I think there's no Myotismon, but I mean, it's weird because, like, there is someone coordinating the whole thing, but not the individual actions of all the Digimon. Right? Like, there's still someone pulling the strings of everything, but not, they're not an organized threat.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of let a bunch of dogs loose to see the chaos, not to actually attack people. I wrote down a lot of different, like, possibilities of why it is, but I feel like Ashley effectively explained, really.
It was super easy.
So now I'm like, I had like five different alternative, like, is it the lack of Digimon? Is it the lack of purpose? Is it the lack of Myotismon? Is it because we're used to the real world? Is it the lack of danger? Does it matter this doesn't work because this isn't the real battle? This is just them being, this is stalling for the real battle. But yeah, Ashley, you effectively answered it. and then I wrote, I'd like my stakes well done, please.
Wow. Jeff, get off this podcast.
Bye, Jeff.
But it's like, it's such a weird contrast between the last arc ended with, like, the world literally being on the verge of collapse and, like, no one stepping in to help them. And then when it's, like, there are Digimon everywhere and it's, like, we got help from Azulagmon, we got help from Genii, we got help from a different million different Genies.
Clone Genii.
It's weird because it's like, which was more of a danger when both worlds were going to be destroyed without anyone noticing, or when a couple of Digimon are hanging around but everyone's upset? It's a little strange.
I mean, it's way more interesting to think that, like, most humans don't understand what's happening. So, I mean, but they've done it so many times before in the movies. It's like, and then, well, I guess not. But just, like, the Chinese army being like, oh my god, we're going to start World War III over these monsters that we don't understand, who, like, we as an audience are like, they are not bad. I don't know. The stakes come more from humans acting silly, which is realistic to me.
Agreed.
Yeah, I wish that had been the focus. That would have been really cool to see, like, you know, a longer arc with, instead of the focus being, like, we need to round up Digimon, because, like, the rounding up Digimon is, like, so trivial every time. It's just, like, there's another episode where they're going to spend half the episode rounding up Digimon, another, oh, they're going to do it again. Like, it would have been cooler instead to see, like, the repercussions of, like, how everyone's flipping out about it and, like, dealing with that instead. But that's not really the kind of show this is.
Yeah, like, the reason that it doesn't feel like there's any stakes is because, like, I don't know, I'm thinking of, like, in France, like, nobody even notices that those Digimon are there, seemingly, except
no one is even, like, patrolling the Palace of Versailles.
Exactly. Like, it's like, that doesn't make any sense. Oh, my God. Like, there so would silly. Be some catastrophic human response if that was a thing that happened.
Yeah.
I think that is why.
Genii.
He's hot now, I guess.
I'm sad to see old Genii go, but I'm excited to see new Genii.
He's hottie macop robes.
I'm super in favor of hottie macot robes, I guess. Old Genii, whatever.
I'm conflicted because, like, old Genii is, like, synonymous with Digimon for me. You know, like, it's one of those, like, iconic things that I, when starting watching Digimon, it's like, that. He's such a weird character.
He's still weird.
Yeah, he's still weird.
Yeah, I guess. There was a line this time that I noticed I never really noticed before. Well, I guess I haven't watched in 7 years, but I totally did not remember at all, which is when Genii explains what he's been doing the past 4 years. And he says that he's been stopping scientists from finding a way into the digital world. There's actually a part where some scientists being like, where'd my data go? And then Genii, like, closes his laptop smugly. But it's especially weird with the conclusion that we know we're leading to, which is that everyone gets a Digimon, and presumably the digital world is open to anyone, to have Genii at this point be like, no, no one is allowed in the digital world except for people that we have chosen. And there's a big discrepancy there. And it made me think, like, maybe this is one of the themes that's going to be approached in Try. You know, we end the series with Jedi is stopping people from seeing the digital world. And then by the time of 25 years later, it's open for everyone.
Or maybe it has something to do with, you know, the upcoming end of this, which we're starting to see here with so many Digidestined around the world. It's like there are, and I think they make a point during one of the episodes of, or maybe not, I don't remember if this was in the episodes, if it was something I read somewhere, but the other Digidestined kids are apparently not chosen children. They are just kids with Digimon partners, which is fascinating. Which is also something you can say about Davis and the other two, whatever their names are.
My interpretation is that they've all been chosen for different tasks. So, like, you can have different tiers of, like, the original children maybe are, like, the most fated because they were chosen several years ago, which in digital world years is, like, hundreds of years or whatever. But, so, like, I could see that kind of being, like, making them more of a mythical status, whereas for the new kids, it's just like, well, Digimon Emperor, shit, let's find someone. And then for the Digimon around the world, it's just like, find people right now.
I guess I'm just trying to justify the decision, like, if there is a decision to be made about who gets to be let in that, grammar, but this season's growing and growing cast of people that are involved with the digital world prove themselves starting here.
I didn't really see them do anything.
Well, they haven't really yet, but I'm trying not to say much about what's coming up.
Okay.
Right, like the next arc deals a lot with
new people.
Who is allowed into the digital world. And I feel like the show never really addresses, like, never ties it into Jedi's stance here connects to Oikawa at all. They don't really
draw that line. Yo, spoilers.
We know his name, right?
Yeah, but we don't know what he does or what he's trying to do.
We don't need to prevent saying spoilers unless it's something really explicit that, like...
We know the plot of Try, everybody! Here it is!
I read something... Oh, there was actually a feedback in our... So it was feedback from episode 205? 204? I can't remember now. But they were mentioning... It's a sentiment that I've seen elsewhere in a lot of places that, like, 02 is super inconsistent because they pretend, and I think I expressed it earlier too, that, like, they pretend that adventure never happened, that no one has seen Digimon, which is just, like, shown to be blatantly false by this arc, because once they see Digimon again, everyone's like, these are these monsters from 4 years ago. They've just gone back to their peaceful lives, because why wouldn't they? Yeah.
Humans, we're such fickle creatures.
Did anyone have anything to say about the diversity of...
The diversity of characters?
The diversity of America.
Just America? There was...
It felt like they tried to make America look like a melting pot.
Right.
In particular.
They made the attempt. I'm okay with them making the attempt.
I mean, it's just like my understanding of most other countries is that they are much more homogenous than America. So for them to make the attempt is like, well, at least you acknowledge that there are more than just white people in America.
That's a good point. I was thinking that it seemed like, I don't know, something about it seemed off to me. I couldn't really...
Tokenization?
Yeah, but they're not really, like, it's not like tokenization, because it's not like, I don't know, tokenization is really when you have, like, one character who represents everything about that race, right?
Or, yeah, whatever, gender, too.
Yeah. I don't know, I was okay with it, with what they did. I liked that the kid who kind of got most of the action besides Michael was the little black kid.
Oh yeah, wait, whose voice was he? Because I just like could not.
He's Tommy. It's Tommy's voice from Digimon Frontier. Yeah,
also I'm pretty sure that character's name is Ash.
I'm not sure, but he has that hat.
He was very Pokemon reminiscent.
It was, yeah.
We'll have a link in the show notes to that image. Because, yeah, it is basically...
It's a black Ash.
It is Ash from Pokemon.
Yeah.
Wow, Ashley.
What? It's a fact!
You said the word black. That's racist.
That's not racist. I mean, it's like, obviously when you're like, I want to acknowledge that America has multiple races, but without, you know, actually making these people real characters, like, you're gonna rely on stereotypical visualization tropes, like...
Yeah.
Would that Native American kid have been wearing that getup? No, but, like, alright.
So So I had some general trivia about this arc, and there was a lot of geography mentioned. I don't know, a lot of it's really explicit. They say where it is, so it's not as fun as the trivia from last season where it was like, just happened to be in real world settings. This kind of just, if you're listening to the episode, they mention where they are so often that it is not that cool. But anyway, Davis and Ken take down a control spire in Kyushu, which is an area of Japan. Tai and TK get let off near Eiffel Tower. Cody and Joe get let off near Sydney Opera House.
Wait, didn't Tai and TK get let off near the Arc de Triomphe?
They got let off by the Eiffel Tower and then walked to the Arc de Triomphe.
Okay.
Because they were there later.
Right, okay.
Sora and Yuli get let off near the Kremlin in Moscow. Imperial Jamon destroys a control spire on Alcatraz, and there's a point, the camera is from San Francisco, which is where Ash and I live, so that's pretty cool.
Well, they also make a stop in Miami, which is close to where I live.
Yeah! There we go!
So, Davis, Matt, and Ken get let off in Miami Beach, which I feel like whenever they wanted to express a beach, they were just like, we have to let them all on the sand, because if we don't say, like, we can't just be Miami, it has to be Miami Beach, so it has to be on the sand.
Well, I mean, Miami Beach is actually, like, a specific place. So, like, sometimes...
But it's not just the beach, right?
No, it's an actual, like, city. Yeah, kind of.
Right.
I don't actually understand the distinctions sometimes, but yeah.
Kind of Floridian are you?
One that doesn't actually live in Miami.
I don't think anyone in Florida likes living in Florida.
Some people do. The people who move here on purpose like living here, usually. But I don't, because I was born here. but Andrew and I were talking. We were like, this doesn't look like what Miami looks like anymore.
Oh, like the building?
So it's a little dated.
I thought it looked more like Fort Lauderdale.
I think it looks even more like a suburb of Fort Lauderdale. Like Hollywood, where I work. Kind of looks like that. Kind of drab and gross. Sorry for anyone who lives in Hollywood.
No, but there's a little tidbit I love about the Japanese version, because I swear they spelled Miami wrong.
They probably did.
And I think they changed it in the dub.
Welcome to Miami!
Anyway, so Shogun Gekkoman is sitting in Niagara Falls in one episode. I don't have an image of this, but while Mimi's parents are on the bridge, I don't know which bridge it is in New York, because I don't really know the bridges in New York, I don't care, whatever, it's New York bridges. There's a tragically anachronistic view of the World Trade Center, which wouldn't be there since it said 2002 or 2003.
Sad.
Yeah.
Awkward.
They go to Rockefeller Square. I'm not sure if it's Rockefeller Square or Center, whatever, where the Christmas tree is. Cherrymon incident. They round up the Digimon in Central Park. Then in Hong Kong, the place where they get let off in Hong Kong is called Nathan Road, which is apparently a really big and famous road. When Cody and Joe start their episode in Australia, they're on the Gold Coast of Australia, which is actually 500 miles away from Sydney Opera House, so that doesn't make any sense. But they're both on the East Coast. It's just like the top and bottom of Australia, basically. So, yeah.
Oops. They had to give you a visual clue that you were in Australia.
Yeah, basically. That's like the only thing that people would recognize. And a lot of these references to place names weren't explicit. Some of these, a lot of them were mentioned explicitly, and it's pretty obvious, but some of them were mentioned in these like title cards that were in the Japanese version. And so Tai and Tika start off with the Arc de Triomphe. They go to the Palace of Versailles. Matt and Ken start off in Acapulco, Mexico. And then the place where they go to the Mayan Pyramid is Palenque. I don't know how to pronounce that. Palenque?
Don't ask me.
I don't know.
That's all I had for places. Did you guys notice anything else I missed?
Where were they in Russia?
Moscow.
Just Moscow.
I mean, I think they mentioned, they said Moscow in Japanese, the card said Moscow, but also they were shown dropping off by the Kremlin. You could see the Kremlin in the background.
Fine.
So, I was surprised by the timeline and how consistent it was, because in the Japanese version, they actually have those title cards that say where the places are, actually list the time every time they transition, basically. So they get let off in Miami Beach. That's like, I think it's Ken, Matt, and Davis get let off in Miami Beach at 10:15 p.m. And then it lists the Japanese time too. So that's at 12:15 p.m. Japan the next day on Christmas Day. And then they finish in New York at 5 p.m. Japan time. Hong Kong, they arrive there at 1 p.m. Japan time. Australia arrive at 1 p.m. Japan time. Anyway, and like the times, I don't know how much value is in actually listing all these, but the times actually line up with the like time of day it is in those places. Like it's dark in New York and Mexico and Paris, but it's daytime in Australia and Hong Kong. And Russia, so that was cool. Or Russia. That was cool.
Cool beans.
Yeah. Supposedly, so this is according to the Digimon Wiki, I don't really buy it, but there's an image when Michael's dad is, they're saying Michael's dad's a movie star, and they show the movie poster, and it's supposedly, according to Digimon Wiki, a Indiana Jones reference.
This is so generic.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like a generic Westerner. Right, yeah, it's so generic.
It's generic as hell.
Like, my immediate thought was also Indiana Jones, but, like, it is a very generic.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a dude with a gun and a horse. Who cares?
Yeah.
But also, I looked at the Indiana Jones movie posters, and there's only one where he actually has a horse, so.
Yeah. But it's the hat that's doing it for me.
Yeah, it's the hat.
That's it. That's literally it.
But it's, I mean, Indiana Jones and his hat is a very iconic thing, you know? Like, we can be excused for immediately thinking that.
But so, the names in the top left, Digimon Wiki claims, are all based on real Hollywood actors. And I think a lot of these are stretches. Well, so the first name is Michelle J. Batron.
Barton. That's Barton.
So they claim that's that's Michael J. Fox, which, yeah.
Wow.
I see Jodie Forrest, which is Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one seems pretty clear. The other one's,
Alan Ford could be Harrison Ford.
Yeah, Harris, that's not so much of a stretch. But, like, they list Nicholas Dealey. Is that there? Yeah.
Yes.
Nicholas Dealey, they say, is Nicolas Cage, which I'm like, eh.
I don't know. That could be any Nicholas.
Yeah, that's a big stretch. And they say Alec Williams is Alec Baldwin. That seems like a big stretch, too.
I don't know. I thought of that, too.
Alec is a rare name,
well,
I guess.
Well, the thing is, it could be just, it doesn't have to be just one actor per
Yeah,
name.
They could just be picking parts of names out of True. Real actors' names.
Right. It could be like Alec Baldwin plus Robin Williams or something. And John Lenn, they say, is John Lovitz. I don't know who that who? Is. John Lovitz.
I don't know.
I'm too tired.
Yeah, I don't know. And Digimon Wiki also claims that Benjamin is Benjamin Franklin. Not is, but like the name would come from that.
I guess that makes sense.
What? Where's Benjamin?
Jenai's name is Benjamin in America.
And that Jenai in Hong Kong is Jackie, for Jackie Chan.
Yeah, obviously.
I can see that more. Because I'm sure a lot of people associate Jackie Chan with Hong Kong. More less so than Benjamin Franklin. But I don't know what people in Japan think of America. Jenai in Australia was named Hogan in the dub, but in Japanese he was named Eucalyptus.
To go with Dingo, of course.
Yeah, Dingo and Eucalyptus. That would be a great like name for a show. Like them on the
No, wouldn't it be a really boring name for a show?
Did you watch Eucalyptus and Dingo this week?
Did anyone notice that when Armadillomon digivolves into Submarimon, the background music says Warp Digivolve instead of Armor Digivolve?
I wasn't paying attention.
I mean, why would you? I don't know why.
I don't pay attention when they digivolve anymore.
Shouldn't. So in Russia, when Yoli is calling out some cheer, see if you can understand what she's trying to say.
What?
Go something Rangers?
Yeah, she's saying, like, go Digi Rangers.
Oh, Digi Rangers!
Which is, like, I guess a Power Rangers reference?
Shameless. No, it's literally the most shameless Toei reference ever by Toei.
But that's not a phrase in Super Sentai, right? That's only a phrase in the American version of Power Rangers, right?
They do use Rangers sometimes for the names. Sometimes.
I see. So, I mentioned before that the Mexican stereotype, like the guards and stuff, and I was like, you don't even know the whole story about that, right? Mexican guard totally pointed a gun at them, and...
Is that why they got so, like, is that why Ken flipped?
Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yep, it wasn't because he called him a punk. Yeah.
He called me a punk. It was amazing, though.
It's a bit like in Back to the Future when Marty just suddenly is like, flips out when people call him chicken.
It doesn't make any sense for Ken because... What?
I could see him being like elitist and like, I'm not a punk, I'm like a genius and you called me punk, but whatever.
We addressed this a little bit in our recap segment, but I'm a little bit intrigued by how the instant any of these kids leave their hometown, suddenly everything is all about flirting with these other people. So I dubbed this section the heterosexual travel agenda. And it's just, like, relentless everywhere. The only segment that doesn't really have something of this nature going on in it is the one with Davis. And that's because...
What about Joe and Cody?
Oh, yeah. I guess that one doesn't happen.
They have a relationship with food.
Yeah.
They do. I forgot about Joe and Cody. Joe and Cody, that was just, like, a very forgettable episode. Or half an episode.
Yeah, I didn't really understand anything, but okay.
Yeah.
A lot of those arcs are forgettable, so understandable. It's true.
Or, well, no, a lot of it was extremely memorable, but for poor reasons. Like...
Yeah, a lot of memorable set pieces, but not, yeah.
It's just, like, they drive it home. Like, we're used to everyone being in love with Kari, I guess. And by everyone, we really mean just Davis, but...
TK has his moments.
TK has his moments, but it's more of a we are the same type of deal, and where would he be without her, etc. Although
sometimes he's, like, protective.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not denying that the shipping is there. It's just not the same, it's not framed the same way as a lot of, as Davis's interest in Kari is, or other Digimon's interest in Kari is. Kari is often very much an object of desire, whatever that means.
And Mimi gets hit on by creepy Digimon.
With poop, yes.
Yes.
But then, like, France, freaking France. I'm so upset about, like, everything in that episode. Like, since when were Ty and TK like that? You know?
I don't know.
I guess it's like foreign girls are so much more attractive.
Is it because Ty just got turned down by Sora? What's TK on about? And, oh, I'm just, like, so uncomfortable with TK's grandpa being like, this is how you charm a girl. And, like, you can do the cute sort of, like, gentlemanly thing. Like, fine, whatever. But it's creepy in this context.
Yeah, no, it's definitely presented as super creepy in this context. Like, even, like, he seems actually adamant about, like, I really like this girl. And I'm like, what?
Like, I don't know. I'm maybe trying to, like, block that perception out. Because it makes me so uncomfortable, but, like, I'm just pretending, like, no, he's just showing the boys how it's done, but even that is creepy.
I blocked it out so much that I was like, this can't possibly be TK's grandfather. Like, I thought the dub just made that up again.
But he is canonically TK's grandpa, right?
Yeah.
Like, yes, that's apparently legit? That is, yeah.
Okay. And just, France. Can we forget France happened? I can't forget France happened.
I don't know. I thought it was just like, oh, foreign girls are so intriguing and whatever. It's silly.
And I can believe that. Like, getting out and seeing new things and meeting new people and everything's so exciting. And, like, that's cool. But, like, every single time, except apparently for Australia. Because we can go this far and say that, you know, Davis had a moment meeting Michael's dad.
Wow.
Just saying.
It doesn't have to be romantic.
It doesn't.
But I mean, this isn't exactly new. I mean, when we met Michael, there was a moment between Yoli and Michael.
Right.
I think to their advantage, all of these pairings or whatever are not from the same side. It's not like it's always the kids having a crush on someone else. Like, in at least Hong Kong, it's the other way around, which is at least breaks. It's not great for Kari to be the object of affection even more, but I don't know. It feels like a very, like, it feels like a very, like, simplistic view of what kids do. Like, you know, you have boys and you have girls, so obviously the boys and the girls are gonna be like, ew, let's romance each other.
Well, I don't think that's what kids do. I think that's much more an older kids thing.
But that's what they do with the girl in Mexico. That's why I'm like, really? It feels like you forced that one.
No, that one I believe.
So I don't mean kids. I mean like teenagers or like slightly old. I mean like middle school to high school kids, which is what this age range is, except for the girl in Mexico.
Well, actually, they're all 11, aren't they?
Which is not middle school, I guess. Well, it is middle school. That's middle school.
Yeah. But it's not high school.
It's not junior high school.
Who cares? 11.
But, like, no. I believe little sheltered kid with a curfew crushing on cute genius boy Ken, who is foreign but speaks Spanish. Like, that is the perfect setup for a romance novel.
Don't talk to me about romance
novels. I'm just saying. Am I wrong, Ashley?
Ashley, how many romance novels feature someone with a dark spore planted in their brain?
There probably are actually a few.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
There are also many, many romance novels that are like the Greek tycoon's pregnant mistress. So foreign people are hot.
Are you reading the same lists of Harlequin novels that my friends are?
I just have to actually merchandise Harlequin novels. That's my life. The best are like the ones with like triplets. Surprise triplets! Harlequin novels are great, guys. I'm just gonna say
that. I don't even want to know.
Harlequin only publishes romance. It's amazing.
The only thing I had to say with this topic is just like it made me realize how weird it is to focus so much on romance and pairings in general in 02 that wasn't really an adventure. And I don't really know. Well, I mean, it's like the kids are the same age, the main characters. So it's weird that like Davis is off the bat all about Kari when that was never really present in the original series. It's weird.
It's a little weird.
I mean, it's just annoying.
I mean, I guess the demographic has aged at least a year.
Yeah, it's also like, again, we mentioned it earlier that the stakes just don't seem as high this time. And, you know, you have a little more leeway to think about things beyond immediate survival.
Hmm. Why can't you guys just be friends? Digi Destin, just be friends.
Because that's not marketable.
No, we're the Digi Destiny. Digi Destiny of Australia. I can't do it.
Don't try.
Yeah, that's all I really had to say.
Why can't you... Some of you be gay, Digi Destin.
Davis is.
Davis again, that's true.
Davis wanted to see Ken so bad.
I know, that was really cute. Okay.
He was like, he's not an individual or something at some point. And I was like, wait, what?
What? What?
We're already engaged, guys.
Jeez. I'm pretty sure Davis has a line where he claims that Ken... Like, because they're trying to argue that they can't go to Ken because they can't focus on individual people. And Davis is like, he's not an individual. He's one of the group. And I'm like, I don't think that
he says he's one of us. Yeah.
I'm like, I don't think that came out as you meant it.
I don't know. I thought it was like, you know, it's like the 02 kids need each other. They need to be in pairings to get to ultimate level and stuff. So it's like.
I knew what he meant. It's just it didn't come out like he thought it did.
Yeah, It was cute. And I think that was further... That is actually a moment I really like about Davis, but it shows that he's not a leader. He's not a leader, but he's very good at bolstering individual people. He knows what
he's good at influencing others.
It's not that he's good at influencing others. He's good at being himself so reliably that they can just trust him to always be there and be the same, except when the writers get at him and make him do really weird things.
Saying he should have had the crest of honesty?
Maybe. That's not one I thought about. I usually like that one with Yoli, but I could see it.
So we got a new devolution this arc, which was Imperial Dramon, and something about it just felt very lackluster to me.
It was not a good episode.
It's not a good episode. It was not like it wasn't climactic in any way. It wasn't a big threat they were fighting. They don't really use Imperial Dramon that much afterwards, aside from as transport. It's a lot of reason for it to be anticlimactic, but it made me think about like mechanics of Digivolution a bit more and how this Adventure 02 has, I wouldn't really call it, I think it has a problem, but I mean, in describing it, it wouldn't necessarily be a problem except for how often it's used, which is 02 has a reliance on item-triggered Digivolution. So at first we had the Digi-Eggs, which you basically just got the egg and then said the thing and then they Digivolved. And now we're getting the Digi-Core-enabled Digivolution, which is just, you know, at some point you get an item which lets you Digivolve. So in contrast to this, in Season 1, when they got to Champion level, they had to have a Digivice and the kid had to be in danger. To get to Ultimate, they needed a tag, a crest, and some revelation about their crest. You know, they had to come into their own regarding that aspect of themselves. And for Mega level, there was a prophecy involved, which is kind of like an item plot-wise. But I think more importantly, Ty and Matt needed to trust in their siblings, in Kari and TK. And also, you know, like Ty needed to rely on friendship with Matt, and Matt needed to take Ty's courage in a way that kind of like... so much synergy in their crests that I could be like, it's an extension of their crests, kind of them reaching the full realization of this crest. So it's kind of revelation. And Omnimon is just pure emotion. Omnimon's just like, no plot reason except for like, they really cared. So they made Omnimon.
Their tears and stuff.
Did they have tears? I can't remember.
Well, it was the other kids.
Everyone's working together.
Yeah, it was the other kids' emails.
Other kids too, yeah.
Which does happen again in this series.
Yeah. So in 02, the first thing we get is Digi-Egg, the first round of Armor Evolutions, which is just, you need D3, you need Digi-Egg, and you say a thing, you Digivolve. Second round of Armor Evolution, which for some reason, you need D3, you need D-Terminal to switch the Digi-Eggs, you need the Digi-Egg, and then you need a command. But somehow they all coincided with Revelations. Like, Davis had his moment about, like, I don't know if I'm really, I don't deserve friendship. And
Cody.
I wish I had a soundboard clip for that. I should find that. I'm going to make a note to find that.
Oh, God.
I'll correct it to Vermin. I'm your friend.
Well, that's how he was treating him through that whole episode.
So there's also Cody has his moment of like, I can't have the crest of reliability because I lied. And then Yoli, her DJ appears out of nowhere because she's like, I'm sincere. And then it appears out of nowhere. And so even though there's no like in-universe explanation for why they are tied to Revelations, they happen to be. And Magnemon is a pure item, just like they find the Digi-Egg, activates it, sure.
Yeah.
Once they hit their champion levels, it's again a Digivice with danger, like the first season. But for some reason coincided with a revelation for Yuli, like it was about how she was trusting Ken, which was kind of weird. And then Digivolution, the DNA Digivolution, actually is pure revelation. You know, it's them realizing they can work together and like being as one or whatever, working as one, except for Tika and Cody, which is just like, yep, it's time. Our watches are ringing. Let's go.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and Imperial Drone is just pure item. It's pure just like, oh, we got the thing now, we can Digivolve. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It feels like 02 kind of copied a lot of the formula from 01. Not 01. I can't believe I just said that. From Adventure. And in places where revelations weren't necessary, added them. And then, I don't know. I just feel like these item trigger devolutions don't really... They undermine the entire theme of the show, which is about growing into yourselves and growing into adulthood by making it about, like, this older person gives you an item, lets you Digivolve, then takes it back. I mean, it's the same thing that happens with the crests and stuff, where it's like, you got this item, you can Digivolve the ultimate. Oh, now you can't because you're not necessary anymore. Take it back. You've regressed. Just not good. Any thoughts?
No, I agree with most of that.
Do you disagree with anything? You said most?
Most. I mean, I agree more with that last bit you said about the crests also sort of being like, this item is borrowed power, you temporarily have this, same with the Mega Digivolutions of 01. But I also believe that 02 is less about growing into yourself as an individual and more about growing into the group and less about being special in the way that the Season 1 kids were very special. Like, you know, you have this one quality that is you. Nobody really has that in Season 2 except for Ken. Hmm. And it's a problem for Ken. So I would agree that it's not as exciting in Season 2, but I think that there is a slightly different take on the theme of maturity.
That's true. Yeah, I agree with that. And it certainly makes a lot of things that, looking at the lens of 02 being about growing into a team and working as a unit instead of working as an individual, I think turns a lot of things that seem like stupid, this isn't as good as Adventure, things into like, oh, that's actually interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it does say something about the impact on us as products of our culture that we find the individualistic stuff more fun from the get-go.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like by nature of, like, you have characters, it's more interesting to see them be their character than being part of a group, you know? I don't know. Like, looking at it's nice when we have, like, the Adventure character designs are very, everyone looks very different. And then for the Tri character designs they've recently revealed, it's like, they all look kind of similar. Like, I don't know, it's,
yeah,
I don't know if it's ever really good to have sameness like that.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get used to it. I think that's just stylist. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Like, I'm sure, like, in context, it won't be that bad. But I'm just thinking, like, that's what I think of when I think about, like, the individualist stuff from Adventure, which is, like, by having everyone have their own problems and own things to sort through, and they have to figure it out on their own and, like, kind of go into their own personality, that's more interesting of a story than...
To us.
Yeah, I can't really put myself in the shoes of someone with a completely different perspective, so I can't. I was trying to argue, like, objectively, this is more interesting, but no, that's...
There's silly. No such thing as objectively.
Yeah. I don't know. Honestly, I just thought Imperial Drummond was ugly and didn't like his evolution.
Wow.
He's not my favorite Mega. I don't think he's ugly. I just... that just whole episode was kind of like, why?
Yeah.
Wait, are we just dissing Imperial Drummond right now?
Yes.
Only his form?
Yeah. I get the impression that his other form is better.
Yeah.
His other forms are definitely better.
This form purely exists to be a spaceship for this arc.
Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
But, you know, if Santa needed to borrow Imperial Digimon, he could have gotten everywhere.
Yeah, but Santa is Jedi.
No, well, if Santa had Imperial Digimon, he'd have enough time to get everywhere and also blow up castles.
So I consider that to be symbolism for, so the Roman Empire, Rome was initially a monarchy, then became a consulate, then became an empire. And I take Imperial Digimon, which is imperial is kind of a Latin word, imperator, empire, emperor, all that. It's the empire overthrowing the monarchy, like symbolized by a castle.
Okay, well, the way that Dub makes jokes a lot of the time is visual gags that aren't even particular to Digimon. Like, they're just ways of animation and commenting on, like it's, in particular, it stuck out to me of, like, I guess in that Imperial Digimon Digivolution episode, Arukenimon and Mummymon are on top of a building, and then, like, it's like Ken sees Mummymon. That's very, very clear. But then the camera like pans up.
It's a very long pan.
And throughout the pan, Mummymon says, "You're getting warmer, warmer."
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. Something about that line was just like, why is this show trying to teach me about visual tropes of animation? Like, it makes it so self-aware in a way, but it tries to like, it's not trying to be, it's like trying to cover something up, almost, like, this pan is really boring.
Right, I think they just had dead air, and it was a very different attitude in the dub of not wanting to have a dramatic reveal like that. You know, like, instead of having a dramatic reveal, wanting to fill silence. And I feel like it's not really commenting on animation tropes or anything, it's just like, how do we fill in this time? Let's make it seem like he's searching for them.
Because then it points out to me the difference between like stereotypical American animation and Japanese, what Japanese animation is more willing to accept. And I don't know, I mean, I just feel like Digimon was a good gateway anime, and the dub helped me realize things about Japanese animation, even though it's like not quality in any way. It's just like, it's a good introduction to that.
Sure, but any dub is, I feel like,
really? No, because I don't think, no, I think that's the problem with, like, because I consider Escaflowne my first real anime, which was also partially dubbed on Fox Kids, and there is just such a clear difference between that content and anything else that was on Fox Kids. Partially it's a tonal difference of, like, Escaflowne is much darker than and it's not really made for smaller children like things on Fox Kids are supposed to be. There's very much like animation things that we're not used to in America.
Like pans?
No, like tonal things.
I don't know.
That pan, you never agree with me about anything.
I really don't buy this argument. Like, not because I disagree with you, everything, because I think this is a big stretch.
No, because the pan, the way that the dub points out the pan is like, okay, in Japanese, it's supposed to be a dramatic moment that they don't want in English.
And I think that's something that, like, to us watching it now, we look at it and we're like, that's pretty obvious. I don't think as a kid we would have noticed. I think that the kid would be like, that I would have just accepted it. I wouldn't have thought about pans,
really?
And thought about, I wouldn't have learned about Japanese animation. I wouldn't have learned about the differences between Japanese anime. And I feel like, especially now looking back, I don't
think it's like a conscious thing. It's just...
I'm just like, and looking back on it now, like, I don't remember what other shows were like that. I'm not like comparing to other shows. I'm not comparing to other Japanese shows at the time. So I feel like making statements about like, this is what Japanese animation was like, and this is what contrasted American animation was like. I'm like, I have nowhere enough evidence to back that up. So that's why I'm like, seems like a stretch without much evidence. And
I just feel like there has to be a way. There's no, you can't just be like, it's really hard for, if I take somebody at Scribd and I give them a manga, they're just like, I have absolutely no idea what the heck is going on in this. They look at it and they're like, it's backwards. I just have no idea.
Well, yeah, I think manga is much, much more like that.
But there's very much visual tropes in anime that are like that too. And I feel like you need that bridge anime. And I definitely think that Digimon is good at being that bridge.
I'm going to disagree more. I feel like Digimon doesn't do a lot of that, the stuff that I would associate with that, which is like, I don't know, there's probably a better name for it, but the stuff where you have like a still against like lines dramatically moving behind the character to make it seem like they're like, this happens a lot in like Pokemon and a lot of like action anime and stuff where like, I feel like it doesn't, where there's not like, even though Digimon is like an action show, there's not really much like intense battle poses and like that kind of stuff, which I think is more unique. Like, I feel like there's not much in Digimon that is weird to Americans.
Really? The spaces that they make in O2 sometimes.
Yeah, the faces, and I think like the Digivolution sequences. It's like a odd to have transformation sequences.
That we all tune out eventually.
Right. As a kid, I don't think I did. As a kid, I was like, oh my god!
Really?
I totally tuned them out as a kid. Eventually, yeah. I was just like, yeah, whatever. I've seen this 20,000 times.
The important ones I cared about. I remember being hyped at the ones I cared about.
I mean, if it's a new one.
Well, not like Angemon coming back in season one during the Meiodas Monarch. Things like that. I'd be like, oh my god, this is happening. And I don't remember the others, so I don't remember being displeased.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like the dub is interesting to look at now for these reasons, to like, because it is so kind of brutally honest in what it set out to do in some ways. Like, you know, it was not subtle in trying to fill the gaps with dialogue and stuff, so that we can look at it now and be like, yep, good job there. And by good, I'm like mostly being sarcastic. But I don't, it seems like a stretch to think that I would have internalized that message as a kid, because I did not come out of Digimon being like, I am prepared to watch anime now and to understand the difference between American and Japanese animation.
Well, you just failed at life.
I feel like I watched anime after Digimon and was like, this is cool. And I can't think of anything in Digimon that actually said like, here's how to understand Japanese animation.
Is there nothing in you that was like, this show is not American? Because it was always very clear to me that shows like Digimon, Pokemon, Cardcaptors were different than American.
Well, it's hard to remember, because it's like they talk about Japan a lot,
but even visually, like, I just get the impression that you didn't watch a lot of American cartoons, is what I'm getting.
A little bit. Never, like, consistently.
I think that's the difference.
Maybe. But I just, like, the Pan example, I feel like it doesn't really, I don't know.
I don't know why you're so focused on that one example.
Me or Ashley?
You, Jeff.
Well, because that's the one example Ashley's provided. Well, do you have other examples?
Well, it's hard.
So that's why I'm like, this feels like a vague feeling you have that feels like a more highfalutin theory than an actual pattern. Like, if it sounds like the kind of nice to think theory to feel good about, then it does feel like a pattern backed up by examples.
Okay. I will agree to disagree with you.
It's like you can't express an idea without having a word for it. These people in Asian countries don't even know the idea of sadness, kind of thing.
Oh my god, I can't believe our teacher said that.
I don't think he said those words, exactly.
The Secret Wharf hypothesis? Are we really bringing that up? That has nothing to do with this.
What I mean by that is something that's like...
It wasn't sadness, it was depression, let's be real.
Oh, okay. But anyway, it's like... I don't think it was Asian countries, exactly. But my point is the idea is a, like, cool idea in theory, not backed up by evidence. So it's, like, it's such a compelling idea, which is what I think, that's why I'm disagreeing.
Well, it feels backed up in my personal experience. And, again, my personal experience, like, what I'm getting from you is that you just didn't watch enough American cartoons to feel the difference.
I'm sure I did. I just don't. I never consistent. Like, there's no like series like Digimon or Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh or those that watch for long enough to really.
I was like totally obsessed with Recess and Doug and others, among others.
Those aren't action shows, though.
What does that matter?
I consider those just like different genres.
Okay, there's like, what was it called? There were plenty of generic superhero craps that came on WB.
Static Shock.
Yeah, Static Shock. That was the one I'm trying to think of.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I really liked Static Shock.
Okay, Ash, when is 02 set?
I don't know.
2002!
Well, that's obvious, yeah. I forgot about that part. So on With the Will, I was having a discussion with Digital X and mentioned something like, I've always been confused by the timeline of the Japanese school year and when 02 is set. And I was like, yeah, I'm always confused by that too. And I watch a lot of anime and I'm always like never really clear what the seasons are, what the difference, like when the school year starts, I know they have a winter break, a spring break, a summer break, but like never sure how long they are and stuff and how that fits into 02. And it was pretty clear in Adventure because it's like it all takes place during summer break. Like it takes place over a couple of days in the real world. So you don't even need to know how long the summer break is. But So I looked into this after having a little discussion with DigitalX, and the Japanese school year first term starts April 1st and then runs to late July. Then they have a summer break for 6 weeks, around 6 weeks. And then their second term starts early September to late December. They have roughly 2 weeks of winter break, which is a little long for like U.S. schools, I guess, before you get to college. But then term three is early January to late March. So, and then you only have 1 week off for spring break. So like, I find that particularly weird because it's like, you only have a week between your actual, when you switch years, you have like 4 weeks, you have like 6 weeks off in the middle of the school year and then 2 weeks off again. And then between school years, you only have 1 week off. It's super weird. Did you all know that this is common knowledge?
I had a vague notion of how the Japanese school year worked, but not in that much detail.
I feel like you don't need to know more than that they only ever get a couple weeks off in between.
But that wasn't the point. They have several breaks.
Yeah, I know that they have several breaks, and you don't need to know more than they have several breaks and they get only a few weeks off.
Well, for winter break, or for spring, for summer break, they get a lot off.
That's not any different than America.
But it is, because in America, it's between different years. You feel like you're done the school year, you got a long time off, and then you come back to a new school year. But in Japan, it's like, you know, you get off and then you're back to the same school. I always found that confusing in anime, because it would, like, they'd have, like, in Haruhi, like, I never knew how big of a deal summer vacation was, because they come back and be the same school year and stuff. So anyway, the thing that makes it interesting is that there is so much of both Adventure and Zero Two that actually coincides with the Japanese airing schedule. So the episode of Adventure Home Away From Home, where Tai goes home and it looks at the thing, it's August 1st, actually aired in Japan on August 1st, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really interesting is that in Zero Two, the episodes basically coincide with when they aired, when they're set, when they aired. So it's like roughly a week between each episode in the digital world timeline, or the Digimon timeline.
Hmm.
Like, the episode one aired in April 2nd, which, and school year starts on April 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And then episode 15 aired around July 16th. And that's the first episode where the kids start wearing summer clothes. So that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 17, which aired on July 30th, and the kids stop using the computer lab because summer break starts, which happens in late July. And then they celebrate August 1st the next day. Or no, right. So like, it aired July 30th and August 1st is the next day. Then there are a couple episodes take place during the summer when they go camping and take down Ken. And then once they're done taking on Ken, episode 22 aired on September 3rd, and they're back at the computer lab again. Which I feel like the dub never really addressed, because it was like, oh, we're going to be gone for a while because the computer lab isn't usable, and then they're just using it a couple episodes later. Like, I never had a sense of how much time was passing, and it turns out it's like roughly a week per episode. But then episode 26 and 27, the kids stop wearing their summer clothes, go back to their original clothes, and that's on like August 1st, so it makes sense. And then, I said October 1st. And then episode 38, which we just watched, aired on December 24th on Christmas Eve, and took place on Christmas Eve, and was the first appearance of winter clothes. So it all roughly lines up until that point. And then everything else in Adventure Zero Two takes place in the days up until New Year's Eve, even though it didn't finish airing until March. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. So when the kids reunite the older kids with their Digimon, there, this image in the show notes, Joe is hugging Gomon.
Yes.
And Joe says, Gomon, don't squeeze so hard. And if you look at the image, they're just like barely hugging. I'm like, Joe, you're so silly. I bet Ashley found that endearing.
I actually wasn't really paying attention at that point in time.
I don't think the dub writers expected you to be.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time we see Oikawa. We didn't really talk about him before. What were your reactions to Oikawa?
Well, I've seen him before.
Well, okay.
So I don't have a reaction to Oikawa.
Really? Like, even, like, how he's introduced or anything?
I think the way the, whatever he's drinking smudges on his glass is really gross. That has always grossed me out.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I guess we'll have an image in the show notes when I find it, or when Ashley finds it later.
I mean, he's just so visually unappealing and bad guy that I'm like, whatever, show. Don't even try to...
His character design is, like, extremely... It's not subtle. It's like, I look so evil.
Right, so why does the show even bother to try to be like, oh, look, he knows TK's mom. Clearly he's a good guy. I'm like, I don't care, show. Just shut up.
Oh, you think that was trying to set him up as a good guy? I thought it was making like ominous, like he was investigating stuff he shouldn't have been.
I mean, he did seem ominous, but it was also like trying to form some sort of non-ominous connection between, like, some previous non-ominous connection between the two.
Hmm. I figured she was like creeped out and like, why are you talking to me?
I was like, I just don't care. Like, I do not care about anything that they said, because just visually, I was like, yeah.
You're bad.
You're a creeper. Yeah.
I really liked his line at the end where he's like, enjoy the holidays. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Like, if it was effectively ominous.
I thought it was funny.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
I'm mostly just like excited to see how, because the show is going to turn what we've seen of him so far on his head in only a couple episodes. Triceramon, new Digimon.
No reaction. Is lackluster.
It's literally just a Triceratops, just like,
yeah,
as a Digimon. That's, yeah. We talked about Imperial Digimon before. Ashley compared the design. Yeah. I don't hate the design as much, but it's not great. Although I did like Davis's reaction to Imperial Digimon was pretty great.
See, this is one of those moments where I'm like, this is the animation that is different from America.
Anything that people wouldn't be able to get that? Or like, would it be jarring to people who haven't seen it before?
There's definitely a learning curve of like, it's the same thing when people talk about emojis, isn't it? Like, different things, different expressions in different countries mean different things. And for us to learn the same visual tropes is like, there is some, you have to learn those things.
I guess so. I feel like more it's that if you have never seen anime, seeing this image, or you haven't seen cartoons. I don't know how much this spreads into American cartoons, because I really don't know much about American cartoons. But if you see this image and you are not used to cartoons, you're going to be like, why is he drawn so weird? Like, if you're not used to it, it's going to draw you out of it so much more that, like, you have to be used to it to really appreciate it, like, in context for what it is instead of just looking weird.
Right.
Flareezamon was also new, Digimon. I don't know. It was like a fire dude.
Oh, God. Are we going to go through all the partners? They all suck.
Yeah. Flareezamon Siakomon was like the Octomon thingy, the clams.
Shakomon.
Shakomon, yeah. Octomon was actually pretty cool, I thought. Octomon's like pirate octopus. He was pretty cool. They were pretty cool. Ooh. But Crabmon's just crab. Koelamon was just weird looking.
Well, yeah, because it's based on a Coelacanth. Do you know what a Coelacanth is?
That's not how it's pronounced, but I can't remember how it's pronounced.
Coelacanth?
Yeah.
I don't know what it's based on, so.
It's an ancient fish thing.
That's actually still alive. It's a living fossil.
Living fossil? What?
It's, yeah, it's living still fossil. It's still
They're around. Still around, actually.
Oh, but we have fossils of them, but they're also still alive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I guess is like people.
They literally have not evolved in like a few million years or something.
Well, that's not really how evolution works, but okay.
No, but they haven't evolved at all.
It just means they're still around. They're still around. Say it like
no,
that.
No, they...
Andrew, that's not how evolution works. Don't talk to me.
Whatever, I'm tired.
Mamaimons are all lame. Gyarumon was kind of cool. It was like a evil-looking Mamaimon. Okay, one last thing. This is when Werguruman is fighting Minotaurmon. Hehe.
Oh, yeah. I was like, damn, Werguruman just slammed his crotch. All right.
I thought his crotch was totally his butt.
It's
his butt crack.
It's, yeah.
It's right in the crack.
It's, yeah.
Did you make this?
Yes, I made it.
God damn it, Jeff.
Werguruman's the best.
Isn't it hypnotizing?
It's kind of like that space right between the butt and the crotch.
Yeah.
That awkward space.
I think it's right in the crack. Be sure to leave a comment in the comment section telling us where he's hitting in the butt.
I think they didn't draw most of the crack is what we're looking at here. Because like anatomically, yeah, it doesn't make sense.
But he's a minotaur. So like, does he have a horse butt or a human butt?
Would that change things here? Would that change what we're looking at here?
I don't know. I don't know if I want to know.
There's so many questions for the audience to answer now.
Yep, answer in our comment section.
This is so new to me. I have so many unanswered questions.
How do you destroy a control spire? What part of it needs to be destroyed?
We need to pull it down.
No, but why do some of them become, like, dispersed into digital dust and others of them are like, I knocked it down a little bit. It just lays on the beach.
And other ones, they tear down, they hit it out of commission, and they have to, like, pull it with a rope forever.
I just don't understand.
No consistency. There's no answer.
There's no answer.
I have a question. In episode 41, how is Metal Greymon flying? Since when could he fly? Ever.
When was Metal Greymon even in the show?
Yeah, wait, where was Metal Greymon? Oh, yeah.
He was totally there. He totally flew.
In France?
Yeah. In France. In France.
Wait, so I just didn't pay attention to that fight scene. I didn't even pay attention to, but that had Magna Angemon, didn't it?
No.
It was just Angemon.
Now you're making me doubt myself.
There was Magna Angemon somewhere in this arc. No, yeah, he was there.
He was there? Okay, I stand corrected.
It's such a waste of Magna Angemon.
It really is.
Or it was between before they went, but I don't know why he would have digivolved before they went their places.
I don't know.
Because I just remember him digivolving.
I actually, yeah, he was there. I only remember him slicing the control spire and thinking, haha, he only, like, cut the top off, but it still vanished.
I mean, and then, I guess, no, Greymon never flew.
I just found a whole archive thread.
Did you actually look up, can Metal Greymon fly?
Yeah.
He can't!
Yeah.
Are you trying to find logic in a kid show?
Trying to find your face in a kid's show.
I'll fight you.
I'll win.
I will fight you.
I would destroy you.
Alright, where did these magic Digimon for all these other Digimon partner people come from if they've never seen a Digiport? Just where did they come from?
Well, when a mommy Digimon and a daddy Digimon love each other very much, they go to Primary Village and Nade Nade an egg.
But then how did it get to the real world?
That is a question for Jedi.
This has been Ash teaching us about the Bergermon and the Beemon.
There is no Beemon. There's Flymon. Right, just fan Beemon.
How? Where did all these...
And Fly Beemon.
How?
It will never
what
know,
is...
Ashley.
There's no explanation for
anything. I assumed that they actually came through with the Digimon that weren't supposed to be there. Like, they were already partners, but they came through... Because then most of them went back, also, to the digital world.
Did they?
Like... Yeah, Gatsumon stayed, and obviously the Japanese kids' Digimon stayed, but little black kids' Digimon totally left.
Hmm, I didn't notice that.
I think all the New York Digimon left.
So then how come only Mimi and Michael have seen a Digiport and gone through it, and like Michael's interacted with Betamon? Are you telling me that like these Digimon and these Digimon partners like chatted with each other? Is that the only way?
That would have been really cute. I'm going with that. I'm going with that headcanon.
How do they know them before?
So it just, okay. I think it just feeds into my headcanon is that they are chosen for whatever task. This was a task they needed. They just, whoever does the choosing, the homeostasis, the chosen choosers, whatever, the thing that possessed Kari, controlling Jedi / communicating with the Zulongmon, I'm just like, okay, we need new people. Send new Digimon. They got popped out with the ports with the other Digimon attacking. So
these kids just totally accept having Digimon.
Yes.
It doesn't make lots of sense.
I just can't make this make sense.
No, it does. It doesn't. There's no point to it. So, okay, I have a big unanswered question. And it's okay. Retrospective,
okay.
Too.
Okay.
So we found out what I was, at first I was, one of my answer questions was, what has Jedi been doing since the first season? Why wasn't he like helping the kids during this time? And it's because he's been busy protecting the digital world from scientists or whatever. However, what was Jedi doing during the Myotismon arc when they were in Japan? The whole world falls to ruin and is taken over by the Dark Masters and like terraformed completely. And where's Jedi? Sending them prophecies?
No.
Like saying you need to go find this Weremon.
This is actually an answered question. I don't know if it's been answered yet, but Piedmon put a black ball in him, and he was busy being in terrible pain. Oh, wait, was that before? That was before. You're right.
Before they met him, and that, I mean, I guess the most obvious conclusion is it turned mold.
That's right. Mixed up my timeline. In that case, I have no idea what he was doing. Well,
yeah. Like, I'm an old man, who cares? Mm-hmm.
Well, his house would have been moved. Old men care about their house being picked up and moved. It's the premise of Up.
I suppose so. I don't know then. I just don't know. Do Digimon speak in different languages? Where that Unimon or whatever was Russian. That doesn't... No, I just don't accept this. Because if they know how to speak different languages, then they should be able to speak their just data, right? They should be able to download every freaking language into their mind, and then they shouldn't have had a language barrier.
That's not how it works. That's not how it works.
They should come with Google Translate.
Google Translate was it invented back then?
Probably not.
No.
No.
Google was just pretty much starting out around then.
I don't think it was. I think it was a couple years before that.
Okay, so if Digimon can speak different languages, then are there digital countries? Are there countries in the digital world? Do they... What? I just... No.
So many questions.
They're probably on different servers, I guess?
That would make sense. That would be cool if they explored that, but they, no.
That would be cool.
They didn't.
That would mean someone would have to host. Like, if you have servers, I mean, someone's, like, actually maintaining the machines and stuff, which is...
Well, isn't that what Jedi and his crowd do?
They seem like they're, like, they're protecting the border. They're not maintaining machines.
Well, maybe some other beings that are not Digimon, but are like Jedi and are like Sparkle McSparks are doing it.
Let's just call him Nicholas Sparks.
Let's not.
So now that the old kids can get to the ultimate form again, what's the point of Sylphimon and Shakuamon if we can have Magna Angemon and Angewomon?
There isn't.
Because it will explain that in the next few episodes.
Do they really?
Yeah, there is no point.
I think Shakuamon is good at defense, right? Shakuamon's good defense, but
yeah,
like...
Yeah, Shakuamon is good at defense.
Magna Angemon could take out the strongest Mega.
Magna Angemon is, like, crazy powerful, so I would prefer Magna Angemon.
Magna Angemon is, like, the cheater Digimon. Such cheat.
Yeah.
Why are you only an ultimate? That is... No.
Well, why is Angemon a champion?
Are you really going to question these things now? We're on season 2 already.
I've always questioned why Angewomon is an ultimate when Angemon is only a champion.
None of Gatchamon's or Angewomon's forms make... Lady Devmon's also an ultimate, though.
Girls.
Because girls, exactly.
Oh, wait. Andrew, did you mean that... Why do we have this... Like, we're going to find out because we have Angewomon in the next arc with Lady Devmon?
No, Lady Devmon comes back. God.
No, something happens. No, it's just... There's this... reason why they never digivolved to ultimate later on when they could have totally had the chance to, and they just don't.
I don't remember this.
You don't know what happens, do you?
I have vague questions. I don't remember specifics. I'm like, there are only 8 more episodes.
But yeah, this happens in the next arc.
RDD.
RDD.
RDD. We go around and each pick our top 2 funniest, most ridiculous, or most touching lines from the episodes. I'm pretty sure they'll be pretty ridiculous this time. Or at least, maybe there's touching things. I don't know. You, my dearest audience, choose a winner on the poll thingy on our website. And if you don't know what our website is by now, that's on you. And this has nothing to do with sports. Nothing.
This happens in whatever episode the Chinese one is.
40.
Okay, it's episode 40, and the Chinese general reacts to the ink character that Octomon draws, and he says,
"Sergeant, I think we've landed in the middle of a B-movie. Only one thing to do. This isn't going to look good on my resume."
My turn. Nobody has anything to say to that. Okay. Alright, this is from the Australia episode. This was the only memorable thing about this episode at all.
Digi Destiny of Australia.
Oh, I know what you're gonna pick! No!
And, this is, they're talking, somebody says,
"That's how things are in Australia, laid back and easygoing. It's sort of how I used to be before I decided to go into medicine."
And I was like, thinking of everyone I know who's in medical school right now. I'm just like,
that's really not what I thought you were gonna
say. That's okay. I'm just sitting here thinking of Jovian.
I haven't talked to Jovian forever.
Jovian.
Yeah. Jovian is surprisingly similar to Joe, actually.
Don't make me think about it.
You know it in your heart to be true.
Maybe.
Jeff.
Oh, yeah, that's me. Okay. So my first pick is when Jedi appears and Yoli screams,
"No! Ghost!"
And then Jedi replies,
"No, I'm not a ghost. Would a ghost look this good to you?"
Gosh. Gosh. Okay. I don't know where I just... Maybe I'm so desensitized to this dub now. I just can't even... All right, I'm gonna go with something from episode 39. I guess it's no. Before Davis and... What?
No.
No.
You're not allowed.
No.
It's before Davis and Ten show up, I guess, and Arukenimon and Mamimon are talking. Arukenimon says... Oh, no. I guess they're appearing because otherwise this line doesn't make any sense. So, Ken and Davis appear. Arukenimon says...
Something's bothering me. Where are the rest of those kids, and why did only one of them come to help their miserable friend?
Well, they're probably on the internet trying to sell off their trading card collections because the world is coming to an end and there's nothing they can do about it.
And I was like, that's so specific and also hilarious.
That's me.
Yeah.
That's me right
yeah.
there.
Andrew, your mummy
mom. He's got us. It's an accurate portrayal of youth.
I actually don't have my notes, so I totally forgot about that one.
Yeah, Andrew's working off of, like, transcripts of the actual episodes right now.
That's sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of moved into my apartment.
Well, we're back to you, Andrew, so, right?
Yay! Yes. Now, this is just, like, wow, how did I... Why would they put this in a kid's show? And it was just like, this is a very Digi Christmas, I believe. And it's the guy's in the TV studio, and the first guy, who is apparently named Charlie, says,
"What a concert! These crazy kids!"
Yeah, Woodstock. Now that was a concert.
And that is a reference no kid would ever get, right?
No, that's not true. I feel like...
No.
I feel like that kind of line of like...
I think even back then, I knew that Woodstock was some kind of concert for grown-ups.
Yeah.
For grown-ups.
I think it's a trope of saying, like, a person being like, oh, but Woodstock was a concert. Woodstock was, like, better than this concert. So I feel like I got that as a kid. Or maybe it's not a trope and it's just in that show. It's just in Digimon. I don't know.
I just find it weird that they would put it in here.
I think they were just like, we need something, some kind of joke about a concert. We already use our rock puns. So. They have a quota of one rock pun per music concert.
Only one?
I don't know. Maybe more than that.
I think it probably depends on the episode and how many rock Pokemon are in it.
No Pokemon in Digimon, Ash.
Did I just say Pokemon? It's really
yeah,
late.
Did.
It's really, really late.
Yeah.
It's
I don't
blame listeners,
you.
It is 12:30 a.m. I want to kill everybody.
Next thing you know, someone's going to make a Monster Rancher reference or something.
I would make a Monster Rancher reference if I remembered anything about Monster Rancher. Okay, so this episode, this quote is from episode 39, and they're trying to contact the Digidestined in other parts of the world, and Izzy is like,
okay, Ty, you write Bad Kids in Europe, Matt, you take North and South America, Sora, you've got Africa, and Joe, why don't you order us some sandwiches?
I was like, oh, Stone Cold.
You just like anything with Joe in it.
I do just like anything with Joe with it.
Even when they're making fun of Joe, you still like it.
Yeah.
I knew you were gonna go for that one, Ash.
I know.
I knew it.
It was so funny.
Goodness. Poor Joe.
I love Joe.
I know you do.
He is my child. Although if he's Jovian, that makes it awkward.
That's awkward.
I think it's always awkward.
Jeffrey, it's your turn.
Okay. So mine is from episode 41, and it's when they're running up to Palace of Versailles. Like they saw that it's been open and deserted or whatever, and they're running towards it. And TK's grandfather says,
prepare for the Battle of Versailles! Here's the second one!
And I just found this hilarious because there is no such thing as the Battle of Versailles. The dub writers put zero research into this. There are several
Even
treaties of Versailles.
The dub writers didn't like the France episode.
I kept thinking that. I was like, is this the correct use of Versailles?
Is there a Treaty of Versailles? I think there were a couple treaties of Versailles.
There are lots of treaties.
Yeah.
Wait, there is a Battle of Versailles fashion show, according to...
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that down here. There's a fashion show called the Battle of Versailles Fashion Show. Yeah. I never done anything more about that. It was, like, pretty old, though.
Oh, you know.
The Battle of Versailles Fashion Show.
Maybe that's proof that he's not actually French.
Maybe.
It's possible.
I like it. Oh, I have two that I'm like, what do I do?
You always
Choose
do this.
The shorter one for the sake of your sanity.
Yeah, I have 9% battery on my computer, and if it...
This one is... Episode 41, I guess the, I don't know, Crabmon is in it. Who cares? So Scorpiomon says,
"First you have to get past me, Scorpiomon."
Oh, I'll handle this low-life petty pinching arachnid. Yeah!
No one calls me arachnid.
Okay, we can never ever record this late ever again.
You can find the full show notes for this episode at podigis.com/208. Go there to vote on the Ridiculous Dialogue Draft, submit your own unanswered questions and Ridiculous Dialogue Draft picks, leave feedback in the comments section, read everyone else's cool comments, or find extensive notes on everything we've mentioned on the show. Follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook. We put out lots of extra stuff on social media, and it's not just announcing new episodes, so don't miss out. You can also send us feedback on social media or in the discussion threads on With the Will and the Digimon subreddit. I'm Jeffrey Jeff, and Ashley's Ash McD on Twitter, and Asher's Asher Dashery on Tumblr. The only way to be a cool international Digidestined is to go to iTunes on a computer or the podcast app on an iOS device, search for Podigis, and leave us a review. If you leave us a review, we'll summon your own personal Hottie McHotribs Jenna and give him a culturally insensitive name for you. Join us next time as we discuss the Daemon Corps microarc in episodes 43 through 45 on Podigis, Lesser of Zero Two Evils. Bye.
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 And remember, never stop digivolving.
That's like some clever way to end these segments last time. We have a good way to start it now. Next time you'll be like, F you, Jeff. You don't think it's a clever way to start it?
Goodbye, my lovelies, and hello again in about 2 seconds.
She's not saying that because we're going back to the pre-recorded stuff in 2 seconds. She's saying that because she's stalking you right now and is outside your house.
No. I'm not.
I don't know.
I ain't got no money for that.
I just feel wrong making jokes about stalking because, like, people are legitimately doxxed and, like, I'm, like, afraid that someone could be concerned that we publish their address if they give it to us, you know? Like,
we would never do this to you.
I know we would never do that. And I think anyone could see that we would never do that, and we're not, like, based on all of our politics and everything, we would never be the type who would ever do that. But, like, what I worry about is making light of that, like, that's something that should be joked about and, like, not something that should be taken seriously and, like...
No, internet stalking is a problem. You should actually be concerned that I could stalk you, but I will not because I'm a good person.
If you want to learn more, you can visit your local library. I'm thinking of those sitcoms where, like, it would be, like, in... quote unquote capital letters important episode at the end, like at the
no,
end.
No, you
like,
said this happened before, and Ash and I were like, we don't remember.
Yeah,
this.
I tried to include it in a recap, but I couldn't think of like the actual wording. It would be like an episode of like some show featuring teenagers, and like the episode would be about like them getting like bullied into smoking, and the episode like the main character would be sitting in a library like, smoking is bad. If you want to learn more, visit your local library.
Now you can do this thing called visit your local internet connection.
I think we decided that I was conflating several different ideas of sitcoms.
You were conflating like PBS shows and
I think
like,
I was conflating like Arthur with sitcoms.
Yeah.
This is definitely thing that happened. I feel like it happened in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but then I'm like, their important episodes are always about race, so that's not really something you can go to a library to read up on.
Go read about the civil rights movement, children.
No, it was about, like, as a black person, you will be arrested. Not arrested. As a black person, you will be pulled over just for being black, and that's so shitty. And, like, that's not really something you can learn up
racial
on in the
profiling.
Library.
Racial profiling. Go look it up.
Yeah. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air touches our Philly, Philly hearts.
No.
Yeah.
We moved from Philadelphia to California.
Yeah, we are basically living the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, except not at all.
Fresh Prince of San Francisco?
Are you the Fresh Prince?
You've heard the, like, not the theory, not really, kind of a demand that, like, that a follow-up to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air would be to, like, call it, like, Fresh Prince of Philadelphia or something and take Will Smith's son, who, I think we talked about this before, but, like, for the listeners, we'll take Will Smith's son, who is now grown up in California, super rich, and has never had to, like, it doesn't have to be street smart, and, like, take him from that environment instead to Philadelphia.
My goodness.
And, like, like the complete flip of the of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Because, like,
no,
that
he
now...
might die.
Sitcoms are scripted, Ashley.
Yeah, they might have to make him die.
Anyway, it's just super jarring to realize, like, his son is now as old as he was when Fresh Prince of Bel-Air started. Actually, I don't think that's true. I think it's a couple of years.
No, I hope he goes up to random people in the street and spouts his, like, time is your imagination.
I feel like that summary you gave was more concise, like, made more sense than the stuff he actually said.
Probably.
Which was more like, school, I don't understand how people do it. Like, actually, that was Willow. Anyway, we're talking about an interview that was in, we'll have a link to it in the chat. And it was this interview with Will Smith's kids, Willow and Jaden Smith. And in some ways, they seem like really cool people. In other ways, they seem completely...
Like, were they on drugs when they did this interview?
I don't think
they're
that's the problem.
They're, like, 14, right?
I think the problem is that they've been, like, coddled and just, like, can say anything. That we were also wondering if they were trolling the interviewer, because they were just saying the most, like... Like,
this interview just seems like they're mutually trolling each other.
But they would say, like, what do you, like, I heard you went to school that one time. And then Willow would be like, I went to school. And then I understood why people hate school. And I understood why people love school. And then I understood the universe and that we're all a part of it, but we're also all bigger than it. And, like, what is life if not part of the universe? And what is the universe if not part of life? And how do you be? What does it mean to be? Like, I made up most of that, but, like, that is the kind of stuff.
Time is just our collective imaginings, and, like...
I feel like those things, like, those are, like, legitimate, pretentious teen philosophical ramblings. But there were things that were just, like, all of my friends that have gotten into car accidents have gone to driver's ed, so, like,
so
why should I go to driver's ed?
It's
like... like, how...
Logic, that's how it works.
Jaden, if you're listening to this, we'd love to get you on the show and talk more about your opinions on Digimon.
Oh my goodness, I would love to know your opinions on Digimon, Jaden.
Oh, why did I think Jaden was the one who's interested? Willow, if you're listening to it, we'd love to hear from you as well.
Makes you want to eat challah.
You're so Jewish.
I haven't had challah in, like, years. Like, I used to in college just, like, get a loaf of challah and eat it in a day.
What?
It's very good bread. I will give you that.
It's very good bread. Also very unhealthy.
You know what I'm looking forward to a lot in rabbinical school is freshly made challah, because they just... Rabbinical students just, like, make challah.
You're getting more and more Jewish as you go along.
It's so good. It's so good.
There are also bakeries that make it. You can just go to a bakery and get it.
Or you could get it for free from your friends. Fresh out of the oven.
Then won't you be expected to make challah?
Okay.
Can't do it.
Ashley, Ash what? Ain't no challah back boy.
Yeah,
I could be.
When did we do immigration reform?
That was the Jedi letting people into the digital world or not.
Oh, then when did we do Gatomons out of the bag?
That was the people on the world knowing about Digimon or not.
Okay.
I came up with clever names for everything and didn't actually say them on the podcast.
Well, you said Ghost of Myotismon's Army. Then I got lost after that.
Because I was too clever to not say.
I want you to listen to this music clip and tell me if I'm crazy.
You're crazy.
You drive me crazy.
So this, it's going to be music from a video game and then music from the Japanese version of the show. And I swear they're purposely sounding similar.
They probably aren't.
Yeah.
What is this from?
Sonic.
Wait, do you guys don't know what it's from?
No.
Let's see if you can guess it after hearing it.
Well, someone said Sonic already.
It's not Sonic.
It's not Sonic.
Nope.
Some other Sega Genesis thing?
Mega Man?
Nope. So here's Digimon.
I don't think it's purposeful.
I don't think this is calling back to that.
Okay, I'm just crazy.
You're just crazy.
You're crazy.
Sounds... I listened to it like 20
Both
times.
Both of them sound super generic.
Yeah.
It's generic 90s.
Yeah.
And they don't even sound generic like each other.
Yeah, that too.
So the song is from Wave Race 64.
Why would
I
know what that is?
No way I was going to get that.
Yeah.
I never played it, but I remember...
Well, yeah, I don't know. Actually, you didn't have an N64, but it's played while they're in the boat in Australia, and so I was like, it reminds me of the waves, and I thought it sounded the same, but I guess not.
It probably sounded similar, but it's not the same.
It's not all the same.
Oh, it's definitely not the same, but I listened to it too many times so I couldn't even tell if I was crazy or not. In episodes 43 to 47, Kanaka comes back and kicks the show back into depressing gear. Bye.
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 And remember, never stop staying awake. And remember, never stop digivolving.
No, leave it like that.
Wait, you mean I'm supposed to be asleep forever?
Wait, okay. And remember, never stop staying awake. I mean digivolving.
Never stop staying awake. Okay, yeah.
So stay asleep forever?
I had to count
forever?
How many negatives were in there. No, Andrew.
Wait.
Never stop staying awake is stay awake.
There's only two.
Damn it.
This sentence hurts my brain. Goodbye.
It's too late for this.